Here we go again.
It's time to talk.
I thought it was April Fool's Day when I heard that one. Get me off the air before I have a heart attack. We will have nothing to see for it. There's been many false dawns.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
The kindness of Cork people will never let you down.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversations that matter. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. And a lot of weather-related stories making the papers today, The Independent says. And they're talking about fueling climate change and climate warming concerns. They're saying it was the 10th month, March, was the 10th month in a row to be the warmest on record for the time of the year. Sometimes it's hard to believe that about Irish winters and the months of February and March or even January, even putting them in the same sentence as the word warm. But there you have it nonetheless. The heat is on is a story from The Sun. Storm over, heavy rain for a week, but getting warmer. Quoting Med Aaron, forecasting highs of 18 degrees on Thursday. Where? I want to be there, even for half an hour. I drive there to wherever it's going to be 18 degrees. But bring it on. If you tried to see the eclipse yesterday, and there's a super photograph making all of the papers today, a lot of them in colour, but the black and white one, well, it's not actually a black and white photo. It just looks like a black and white photograph as the moon moves in front of the sun. Or indeed, the sun goes behind the moon. Have it your own way. But not really in Ireland, unfortunately. Like me, you were probably out last night trying to find it in the sky, but there was just cloud everywhere and it wasn't happening. In Mexico, apparently, was the place to be. But some great photographs of it, nonetheless. Now, they're telling me that the next full eclipse visible in Ireland will be 2090. 2090. So that's me totally and utterly ruled out. That's just here. There will be others, but they say 2090 for Ireland. And they had their kind of eclipsy glasses on, looking up in a place called Mazatlan in Mexico yesterday, where they got the perfect view, but you can't look at it. You can't look at it with the naked eye, so you can't. And then, of course, we have the changing of the guard today. I'll get me coat is a front page making The Sun today. I love that headline. And it's literally Leo Varadkar tying up his jacket. I'll get me coat. And Simon Harris, of course, will be voted in as the next Taoiseach of Ireland. Leo Varadkar handed his resignation to Michael Dee at the Auris yesterday. It's interesting, actually, because ahead of stepping down, Leo Varadkar said that he's leaving Ireland in a good place. He's leaving Ireland with a budget surplus, and he's leaving Ireland as the envy of the world. Do you agree or disagree with those statements? Text 0868-104-106. Leo Varadkar says he is leaving Ireland in a better place, with the budget surplus and with the envy of the world. For what, I wonder? He himself is heading to the gym, and he's going to take time off. He says that he hasn't had more than two consecutive weeks off since 1996, and he's looking forward to having a decent summer break. And on all that basis, you have to wish the man well, I suppose, to thank him for his service, etc., etc. But as to whether he's leaving Ireland in a better place, there may well be a budget surplus, but where they're spending it leaves a lot to be desired. That reminds me, actually. Let me just move a story up here, my running order. Talking about budget surpluses, you certainly wouldn't see it if you looked at Cork roads, whether it's the city, the suburbs, or the county. I know I bang on about things an awful lot, but the standard of our roads, and you guys out there that drive for a living, you know, you'll know an awful lot more about this than the likes of me. Bit of an old part-time driver, apart from maybe at the weekends when I do a fairly decent haul down and back. But they're talking and describing it within Cork County Council circles as peanuts. The 70 million allocation, it's actually down year on year from 71.5 million last year, when we need more money and not less. I suppose some might say, Jesus, man, come on, 70 million would buy you one big hape of tarmac. It probably would, but we need an awful lot more, because certainly what they're giving us, because I'm sure we're not wasting it, but certainly what they're giving us is just not enough, because the roads are shocking. So anyway, there's lots of other stories regarding what's happening in Dáil Éireann today, like Sinn Féin want a general election. Wouldn't surprise me. They're saying that the government's you know, track record, particularly on housing, is disgraceful. We have more on that throughout the course of the morning. He's also got to pick his front bench and his ministers and his junior ministers and his super junior ministers and everybody like that. Looks as if Helen McEntee is safe, but they break down in the papers today, like in The Independent, the promises of Fine Gael, the Greens, Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin, Labour and the Soc Dems with regards to their promises on housing. And to be honest with you, I've read them all this morning, had a good look at them. They're all the same. They pretty much all add up to the same hill of beans or the same amount of houses. There's a, you know, a few thousand here and there. We'll come back to that throughout the course of the morning. And because Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, also makes the papers today because yet again, he is taking Google to court. And he's saying, where's the effect that this is an obligation that he has to the public good, he says. I shouldn't have to do this, but I'm doing it on behalf of everybody else because he and others like him have been the target of fake advertising. The claim behind these, they're all gone now. These ads have been all taken down by Google. We tried to find some of this morning. But they're ads using the Taoiseach or the Taoiseach or, you know, certainly in the case of Micheál Martin, to sell cryptocurrency. His image is linked to these cryptocurrency adverts online. And you know, you would think that with all of the tech and the savvy and the, you know, the amount of, I suppose, technology that Google have, that they could prevent all of these fake ads if they really had the will and the way. Well, they have the way if they had the will. And then there's many court reports in the papers today. There's a Cork-based restaurateur is going to be jailed next month for attempting to sexually exploit a child. This is a very interesting one in the sense that this individual, Echo this morning says Turkish national Mehmet Umid Pala from Turner's Cross. He actually had two restaurants on the North Main Street. One was Turkish and one was Italian. He's closed those down since, but apparently he, unbeknownst to himself, was not talking to a 13-year-old girl online. He was talking to an undercover Canadian police officer who repeatedly told him that she was a 13-year-old girl, to which he was replying, "I don't mind age." There's been an adjournment now to sentencing, although the judge did say that he would adjourn, but that this man will be going to jail. She said, sorry, not he, I should have said she. The judge said this man will be going into custody. There was an adjournment so the accused could conclude business matters, put appliances into storage and stuff like that, then come back before the courts for sentencing. So that's a front page of making the Echo today. They also carry the story, you know, we talk of you know, fraud and cybercrime, and it's on the increase and it's growing and growing and growing. I just mentioned that in general because I'm not in any way referencing what I just said there to an active and open court case that's happening in the Cork courts. This is a case that's been adjourned for now and will come back before the courts again in May. But it's the case against a 42-year-old man who's charged with alleged cybercrimes. There was an investigation locally and by the FBI in America, and the case before the Irish courts, the Cork courts yesterday, against Suleiman Mazhar, previously of Money Gorney and Douglas, had be up for mention again now, I believe, sometime in May. But he's accused of having a smart card reader to make false financial instruments at a house in Passage West. He's accused of having 52 plastic cards embedded with smart chips and magnetic strips, and a final count of alleged money laundering. Now, there's alleged transfers of cryptocurrency seen transferred involving over 2,000 transactions to a total of $346,000 over a one-year period. So this is what the court is dealing with right now. And I suppose the legal term behind this is an accusation of having a smart card reader making false financial instruments. Plastic cards embedded with smart chips and magnetic strips. So that's a story that's active at the moment. We'll have to see what happens after the court case resumes against him. And then you remember the very sad death of a young Cork man back in, actually 29-year-old Carrigaline man was punched and kicked on the ground near his home on the evening at around Christmas time in 2022. There are two men now on trial accused of his murder. There are two individuals, Richard Hoey and Jordan Deasy. They pleaded not guilty. It's December 28th. I remember covering it on the air at the time, 2022, down in Carrigaline. The charges that they did murder Matt O'Neill contrary to common law, and the late Matt O'Neill was 29 at the time of his death. So Liam Helan covers that in the Echo this morning, and that's just a selection of court reports from yesterday. The Vatican is flexing his muscles, and the Pope does that from time to time when he's making new statements. The Mail this morning leads with it saying the Vatican is warning that gender fluidity is an actual threat. But he doesn't stop there, because he talks about sex change surgery. He talks about surrogacy, a grave threat to human dignity. He says gender fluidity is just down to a confused concept of freedom, he says. And he says that gender-affirming surgery and surrogacy and abortion are on a par with war and violence against women and human trafficking. So he says that he says abortion, and also covers, I see in the Irish Independent this morning, he goes further where he talks about euthanasia. He says it's a practice that violates God's plan for human life. Now, more on euthanasia a little later on, or the right to end your own life at a time of your own choosing. A lot more on that throughout the course of the morning. A little later on. And in other news, lads, you talk about birth or surrogacy or giving birth, whoever the case may be. There's research out saying that being a mum comes with all manner of stresses and strains. But this study suggests that, you know, having children doesn't just make women feel older. It actually is true biologically, too, that your biological age can age by up to 3 months for every child. So imagine if you had quins, triplets, quads, or quintuplets. Imagine if 8 or 10 children, like way back in the day, 3 months per child. Do the math yourself. And they also talked this morning about I think the gauntlet has been laid down now. You know, I think the challenge has been made. I think it's pistols at dawn now at this stage, because Dublin City Council figure that they can do things better than we can. And the reason I'm saying that is I read this one online a couple of mornings ago, but Michael Moynihan's copy makes this morning's Examiner, where Dublin thinks it can do better than Cork's English market. Leave them off, says I, and leave them off, says Michael Moynihan in the Examiner this morning, and he's right too. If you missed out on it, he said, there were reports coming out of Dublin about a new market which will open up in Dublin, or perhaps an old market being reopened. It's the city's Victorian fruit and vegetable market, and they're going to spend 25 million euro redeveloping it. That's 25 million euro of Cork taxpayers' money. I know what you're saying. Oh my God, he's off on one. But anyway, it's still 25 million euro, wherever they get it from. So Dublin City Council's chief executive says, We'll be far better. I better not do a Dublin accent. I better not, because he probably doesn't have that kind of a Dublin accent. But he says, we'll be far better off than the English market in Cork once we get things going. But things take a while to get to a point where you can pull the trigger. Then, when you pull the trigger, it'll happen very quickly. So as Michael Moynihan says, shots fired. I see. I mean, it only took the English market in Cork 300 years to get to the brilliance that it has now. And what are they thinking in Dublin? They can do this in a season or a wet week. Absolute notions, the whole lot of them. But I say bring it on. We've nothing to be afraid of. Your thoughts, text 0868104106. And meanwhile, back on Leaside, all sorts of new rules now for the buskers inside in town, lads. More on that after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now, 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
A Dublin market to take on the English market. What would they call it? Of course, Michael Moynihan rightly points out in the Examiner this morning that they did have a go at this not too long ago. They put together a thing called the Epicurean Food Hall. It was short-lived, to say the least. So we'll have to see how they get on with that and their 25 million. The umbrage of them. Let me stay with the Examiner, actually, because I'm going to go down to Owen English, who's got the latest update. These are big changes happening from the end of April with regards to the buskers amongst us, I should say. Owen, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
I have to come down. I'm on a high now. Anger. Dublin suggesting they could take on the English market. Any thoughts on that one?
Let him off, Neil.
Let him off. Make a hames of it.
I was actually in the market last week, Neil. Went in for a bite of lunch in the market gate upstairs, in the farm gate upstairs, yeah, you know. And really, you know, I know I'm biased, but it's hard to beat the English market for the culture, for the history. It's dripping from the walls in there, Neil. So good luck to Dublin. Good luck.
Tell me this. You're late of that parish from Academy Street to Blackpool, but it must have been great when the Examiner was in town, you know. But is it tougher now in Blackpool? Do you miss it more or what?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, Neil. Yeah, it was great being in the middle of town, right in the heart of the city centre. But look, Blackpool is great as well. There's a great village vibe in Blackpool. But, you know, there's nothing beats being in the heart of the city centre. Yeah, it was great to be able to pop over there for a sandwich or whatever, over to the market. Yeah, I missed the sandwiches.
Do you miss the buskers? Because we're going to have a hell of a lot more of them by the end of April. What's happening?
Yeah, Neil, look, I miss some of the buskers, not all of them. And I think that's the reason why the City Council has sought to bring what you might call some order to this. You know, you talk to any trader in town, any business owner or any of the people who work in shops about some of the buskers we have in town, and they'll tell you that they are driven demented by some of them. Why, you know, some might be lacking in what you might call the talent department. Some of them just repeat the same two or three songs over and
over
again.
Some lack talent and repertoire, is it?
Exactly, Neil, yeah. And I think there has been an attempt. Now, in fairness to Councillor Ken O'Flynn, the independent councillor, he did try to introduce bylaws, or he suggested to City Hall over a decade ago that the city needed to introduce some kind of bylaws around you know, the governance of street performers. And he actually drafted his own proposed bylaws, but nothing happened. And it was only last October that the City Council published its own draft bylaws and put them out for public consultation.
Actually, back in the day, without wanting to cut across you too much, one of his recommendations was that they should have to go before audition to a committee to see if they had enough songs and if they were talented enough. Do you recall that?
I do, yeah, exactly. It was almost as if you'd have to go through like an X Factor style audition process, and only those with the required talent and repertoire got through. But as is often the case, you know, it sort of his proposal died a death. Nobody kind of took it on and ran with it. But last October, in fairness to the Council's Strategic Policy Committee, they grabbed this issue by the horns, and they came up with a raft of proposed bylaws, and they put them out for public consultation. And in fairness to the city's busking community, they organised themselves, due in no small part to the efforts of the gentle jazz man, Paul Doherty. He's a great saxophone player that people might know from around town. And he got the buskers together and he said, look, lads, these are bylaws that are going to affect us. We better get involved in this process. And they did. And they made suggestions. And during the public consultation, City Hall listened. And they came forward with a range of proposed bylaws that were put before city councillors last night, and they've all been approved now. So now we have this this new street performing bylaw in place. There's a raft of different rules and regulations that buskers will have to adhere for, and they're going to come into effect, they think, from around the 20th of May. So from the 20th of May next, buskers will have to have a permit. They'll have to busk in designated zones. 23 zones around town have been designated for buskers. They also have been assigned designated busking slots. So you'll have a two-hour performance slot in one zone, and then you'll have to move from there to another zone.
Where will they know where the zones are? There's that many of them.
Well, there's a list of them that's going to be published shortly before the laws come into effect, but they're also going to be designated by ways of a small, like a marker or a sticker that will go on the ground, a sort of a 4x6 inch sticker that'll be adhered to the ground. But a lot of the zones that have been designated would be traditional busking zones anyway. You know, you have them on Mailer Street, Patrick Street, Oliver Plunkett Street. But what's new, I suppose, is that each of these zones will now have a two-hour slot. In some zones, you have to be finished busking by 8 o'clock. But the new bylaws direct that all busking would stop in the city centre from 10 p.m.
That's very early. Do you think that's early?
It is, Neil. It is, yeah. I think, you know, there was a sort of a sense of, you know, when people were coming out of a pub at half 11 or 12 o'clock, or coming out of a nightclub later on, that there was a lot of busking in town at that stage. And I think it added a lot to the city. That's now gone, unfortunately, from 10 p.m. But what City Hall was saying, what they were trying to do with this is kind of strike a balance between fostering that vibe, that feel that busking gives the city, but while at the same time trying to respect the fact that the city centre now has a lot more people living in it, and people working there as well.
And I think, also need to but I mean, if you just peel it back a bit further, I remember on this programme from time to time when we dealt with this, perhaps you did something similar in the paper, that if it was later, people would be milling out of the pubs late with a bit of jar on board, and they'd be hanging around in big groups, and before you know it, you got a big long, big loud sing song going on at one in the morning kind of thing.
Yeah, again, look, that was one of those issues that was taken into account. Now, the buskers were kind of arguing, look, could you let us go till 11 or 12? And, you know, we'll wrap up then and we won't be there at 2:30 in the morning kind of thing. But the new bylaws, are when they come into effect, it's the cutoff point will be 10 p.m. And I think it's their attempt, it's City Hall's attempt to try and strike a balance between all of the various stakeholders.
And how do you get around, say, for instance, the guy on the tin whistle that just has the dawning of the day on repeat?
Well, I suppose, you know, people will be able to complain. I know people have been able to complain anyway up until now. They've rung your show to complain about some of the performances around town. But what will happen now is that you'll be able to ring City Hall or the guards, and they will have bylaws that will allow them to enforce the regulations. Now, the permit, just in terms of the other issues in the bylaws, buskers will also have to pay an annual €30 street performing permit. And if you use amplification, it'll cost you €60 for the year. Now, one of the things that arose during the public consultation was that, look, Cork is it's a student city. It has a School of Music. It has a thriving music department in UCC. It has an Academy of Music. And, you know, a lot of young people kind of cut their teeth by performing on the streets. And that €30 a year really is it's a fairly hefty fee for a busker. So the City Council agreed that they would waive the street permit fee for under 25s. So under 25s won't have to pay anything for their permit. They still have to have a permit, but it won't cost them anything.
Will it cost more for big, you know, some of the big groups that you see? There's a big trad band there in town. They sound fabulous, but there's quite a number of them. But would they have to pay more, I wonder?
Yeah, they will, absolutely. And I think the fee for large group will be in or around €180. Okay. So again, it's a chunk of change. And, you know, for other large groups that come into town around, you know, things like the Choral Festival, the Jazz Festival, you know, groups that would be around town, there'll be special arrangements put in place for those groups so that, you know, these bylaws aren't designed to kill the buzz, as you might put it,
yeah,
or to kill the atmosphere that busking creates. It's designed, the bylaws are designed to kind of control it. Now, again, Neil, a lot of things that people are, one of the things that people would have complained about over the years is the noise,
yeah,
from some of these guys.
The businesses
well,
would have, yeah.
Use, yeah. Yeah, especially if they use amplification. And these bylaws now impose a 75 decibel limit on performers. Now, how loud is 75 decibels, I hear you ask. I checked that myself last night. And according to what I've been able to find out, an average hair dryer is around 90 decibels. A washing machine is around 60, 65. So it's between a hair dryer and a washing machine.
Do you know something? You're insane.
So
that's not very loud though. If it was like, some of them are like, you get a Dyson hair dryer, they're all but silent. Like, that's not loud, 75 decibels. Like, it's not like.
Yeah, it was one of the things that buskers were complaining about, that, you know, they wanted a bit more, they wanted a higher ceiling, they wanted to be able to plug in a good amp and go loud. But 75 now is the limit. And I think City Hall will give a bit of leeway here.
Who's going to measure the decibels? Is there a decibel warden going around or what?
Absolutely, Neil. That was one of the questions that councillors, like Terry Shannon, actually raised that last night. He said, look, introducing bylaws is all well and good, but they're no use unless there's enforcement. And who will be responsible for enforcement? And councillors were told that if a complaint comes in, officials from City Hall will go out with a noise monitor, and in certain cases they'll be able to take action. Now, look, will it depend on their own musical tastes? I don't know, Neil, but we'll see.
Okay, so 75 decibels, somewhere just in and around an average hairdryer. I did read in your article that buskers will have to have a minimum of 30 minutes without repeating a song. So there isn't an audition, but that's kind of like as close as you'll get to an audition. You need to be able to play without repeat songs or tunes, or whatever the case may be, for 30 minutes or more. Isn't that the case?
Exactly. Now, whether or not that means that somebody from City Hall has to go out and stand in front of a busker for half an hour to see if they repeat any songs, I'm not entirely sure, Neil.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're working in a shop in town or if you run a business in town and if somebody outside is busking above 75 decibel limit, as far as you're concerned, and if they're singing the same two or three songs over and over again, according to these bylaws, you'll be able to ring City Hall or lodge a complaint, and either City Hall or the guards can come out and move these people on.
Bring it on. The end of April. Okay, let's see if it'll make all the difference. Thank you so much. They didn't pass any kind of caveat to the bylaw saying that under no circumstances from the end of April is any busker ever allowed to perform an Adele song or a Coldplay song, no?
No, that wasn't discussed.
No, that's a pity.
But again, down to your own musical taste, I suppose. Maybe we'll have music police on the streets by the end of April. We'll see.
All right, well done. Thanks, Owen, as always. Good crack.
Excellent.
No, I mean, it's a very valid story because some people start their musical career busking. You see that in the past with many on Lee's side, including Ali Sherlock and Dylan Brickley and Corey Power, Kian DeCrow. They all started busking on the streets of Cork. But what, actually, in the conversation with Owen, he mentioned a chap by the name of Paul Doherty, who himself is a musician. He's a jazz musician, plays sax, I believe, secretary of the Cork Street Performers Association, which I didn't know even existed. So that's another plus this morning. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
Good, my man. Well done on the work that you put together and pulling everybody together. Are you happy? Is it enforceable? Are you looking forward to it?
I'm sorry I've missed some of the conversation you've been having.
You're all right, Pat. We just went through some of the outlines of the laws and the bylaw. Yeah. You know yourself. Yeah.
It's hard to say you're happy because nobody likes regulation. But we heard in Chechnya this week that they're banning any music between 80 beats per minute and 150 beats per minute.
I saw that.
Very restrictive regulation.
That's very worrying.
Be happy with what we've got. But, yeah. I mean, clearly the experience for buskers is going to be different going forward. There's been a level of freedom up until now, which by many of us, I think, has been used well. But, you know, perhaps some people have caused difficulties along the way. So we do understand that there's been a need for regulation. We were glad that the council listened to some of the concerns that we had, and so some of the more draconian regulations have been tempered. But nonetheless, the busking experience will be affected by this, and I think it'll.
In what way, Paul? Is it by the fact that in some places it's to stop by 8, everything has to stop by 10, or is it the decibel level, or what?
Yeah, well, a little of all of those things, or you know, those certainly are issues. I think stopping by 8 for many buskers that won't be an issue, but some would have served the nighttime economy, and that would have been a major part of their sort of activity. So for some of us, that will be an issue. The decibel limit, we had quite detailed discussions with the council around that, and I think even experts feel this is going to be very difficult to enforce, and I think I caught your earlier discussion where it was being pointed out that 75 actually is a very low level in a city that has background noise that exceeds that.
Could I give you an example of it? 75 decibels is about the same volume as an average vacuum cleaner or a Hoover, if you like.
Yeah, you have it. Yeah, that's right.
And it's actually less than a ringing telephone.
Exactly. So if the background noise is already at that level, then a busker just won't be heard and certainly won't add anything to the ambience. If anything, you just add to the background noise if you can only play at the level of the background noise. And so our own preferred method was to just play sufficiently above the background noise so that people notice that there's something happening.
It sounds low to me, I have to say. It's about 5 decibels higher than normal conversation.
Exactly. That's right. And in a large open area, of course, it's really not going to cut through. I'd say in some of the more enclosed areas in the city, you might get away with something closer to 75 decibels, but in the wider areas, it won't. But I think the biggest thing that will be a change for us is the fact that now we have these two-hour limits, and nobody has a problem with constraining themselves to 2 hours. But the 2 hours start at a particular time, so it starts at 2 o'clock and runs till 4 in a given place, and then there has to be a gap of 2 hours in that place before it starts again. So the difficulty is that busking is very weather dependent. So a lot of the time you can't really start at the time appointed because it's pouring down or whatever. So you know we you know duck and dive between the showers and then play when we can. Mm. So being restricted to those hours will be difficult. And also, for example, some of us travel into town on a bus. I travel in from Fomoy, where my home is. And if my bus arrives at a certain time, it won't necessarily coincide with the 2 hour slots exactly. So I might be waiting around for quite some time.
Before you get your slot, your landing slot, if you like, and then you land on it for 2 hours, and then there has to be a 2 hour gap after you before somebody else comes along. Is that my understanding of it? Yeah.
Exactly.
Will it lead to confusion? Do you think?
Well, I think probably we'll all be sort of rushing around. If in certain places you have to start at a certain time, we won't know whether somebody else has gone for that slot at that given time. But because it starts on the given hour, we'll all be running around trying to see where the slot's available at that time. And if the slot you want is not available, you'll be trying to find another one, in a hurry. So I just think it's gonna. It feels like a level of micromanagement that I think whilst we welcome the sort of the efforts to try and do this in a reasonable way, we propose that much more progress could be made through good relationships. If we have a strong association that takes a responsible stance and engages with the council, we felt we could go quite a long way with just self-regulation. If we could be disciplined about that. And I think what we have at the moment is something that will turn out to be somewhat problematic because, I think it's quite difficult to see how we can work it as buskers. So we'll try.
You need an app, maybe a Cork Buskers app.
Well, we're going to have to look at, all the ways.
Are you okay with the permit cost, €30 and 60 for amplification? Yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah, we don't have difficulties with that. I mean, I think if you're, taking busking seriously, you'll make enough to be able to afford those fees. And we welcome the fact that young people have a dispensation to allow them to play without without paying the fee. And also the fact that larger bands don't have to pay, multiples of that fee beyond €180. So I think that's fair.
And tell me this, what about special events or long weekends, like your jazz festival, your choral festival, your St. Patrick's Day festival? Any special dispensations for those weekends?
I haven't heard that there are, but I imagine that, if we keep liaising effectively with the council, that, sensible arrangements will be able to be put in place. I'm not quite sure how the council manages to sort of deviate from its own regulations when there are special events like that, but I imagine there must be some provision for that.
Okay.
Basically, our position is that, we'll continue to try and work collaboratively. We'll really try to make this work, but we do see some difficulties in making it work, and so I don't anticipate it will be easy.
Okay, you'll be watched anyway. They will be policing it, and so will the public, and so will the businesses. They'll be allowed to make complaints about decibel levels, whether there's a character playing the same couple of songs over and over. You have to have 30 minutes of music without repetition. I think that's all acceptable, though. You don't want the same person playing the same one or two songs. You don't murdering.
Not at all. And in fact, we have our own code of conduct, which we brought in ahead of the regulations, and all of those provisions are in that. So we welcome complaints where there are difficulties because we're trying to uphold certain standards as a body of buskers ourselves.
Good stuff.
We're not supporting people that would be causing difficulties, and so the fact that there's the option for complaints isn't a difficulty for us. But I think it would have been helpful if our own code of conduct could have been seen as a basis for self-regulation. I think that would have stopped what seems to be a level of micromanagement around this that may not have been necessary.
There's a lot of detail in it. Can I ask you, are the people of Cork generous? Is there good money to be made?
The people of Cork are extraordinarily generous. I busk for charity myself, so I don't take the money personally. But it's been a very, very effective way of raising funds for charitable causes. So thanks to the people of Cork for that. It depends, of course, on the quality of the music you're playing. I dare say that people who play, at a higher standard do better than others. But certainly in my own experience, people have been extraordinarily generous. But the there's a lovely rapport between buskers and people of the city, and I think it brings great pleasure on both sides. You know, we love playing, and people seem to enjoy the music, and that's reflected in the generous donations people make.
Well said, Paul, and well said, well done for busking for charity, in fairness to you. Paul Doherty, thank you so much for taking the call. We'll see how it works as it kicks in at the end of April. Appreciate it. Have a good one. Paul Doherty is the Secretary of the Cork Street Performers Association. We covered a lot of ground on that this morning. Amongst them, one of the more interesting ones is 8 o'clock in some places, 10 o'clock everywhere. So the later night economy, if you like, spilling out of restaurants late, spilling out of fast food joints late, spilling out of pubs late. Do we have clubs anymore? You know what I'm saying. They don't have that experience that they would have had, but that was somewhat critical back in the day, because the 10 people, if there was someone living in the city or whatever the case may be, if you don't have people living in the city as it is, but that you wouldn't want sing songs with 10, 15 or 25 people and have a big musical free-for-all at 1 o'clock in the morning. But your thoughts are welcome. Text 0868 104 106.
Call Neil now, 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Actually, well said, Ray. Great text from Ray. I was talking about the eclipse and we missed out on it here. He says, I don't know what everyone's getting so excited about. Ireland has been eclipsed from the sun almost every day since last summer anyway. You are so right. We were eclipsed from the sun for most of last summer also, unfortunately. And we get it. When we see the sun, we get a bit of a fright. Yesterday morning, I was chatting with the Australian ambassador to Ireland, Gary Gray, about Australia poaching our doctors and our nurses and our healthcare staff and many of our trained professions, and now openly going after our Garda Síochána. Australia is openly poaching our talent that has been educated here while we import asylum seekers. The cost of living here is one of the causes. The government is responsible for creating this environment. Please ask the ambassador how many asylum seekers Australia has taken in. Actually, they have a very different policy when it comes to asylum seekers, refugees and those applying for citizenship. I might return to it. I want to get some more information on it for you. I'd have to go and check it all again. Why can't Ireland recruit Gardaí from other European countries if we can't get enough to apply here? We might get some fit, hardy, military-trained young men that wouldn't be afraid to confront the real criminals here. I don't think any of our Gardaí are not highly trained, and I don't think any of them aren't willing or able to confront the real criminals here. I just don't think that they always have the right backup, or the right equipment, or the right, work ethic from them, not from them, but from those that really make the laws here and allow Gardaí what Gardaí want to do, allowed to do it. Have a coffee, man, will you? We're heading for the middle of April. It's 5 degrees and raining. You have Gardaí being suspended over old bicycles and for chasing criminals. And you blame Australia for our troubles. Come on, boy, says Henry. Sorry now, it's the Justice Minister you should have on. Listen, it isn't as if I haven't tried to talk to Helen McEntee. You should have the Justice Minister on trying to explain why Gardaí are leaving, not the Aussie ambassador getting on his case for trying to recruit Gardaí like you are. They're leaving because their terms and conditions are poor. You should be punching up, Neil, not down, says Paul in Mayfield. I think it was a very reasonable thing to have the Australian ambassador on to ask the ambassador to defend these big adverts on these rolling vans at Garda stations and courthouses trying to poach our Gardaí. I think he had a good case to answer, and I think he answered it reasonably well on behalf of Australia. I'll say one thing about the ambassador. He stood his ground. He had good answers for all your questions. As much as we might not like our workers being poached, it is their choice, and the ambassador is doing what is best for his country. Pity our politicians don't think like that, says Desi. And one or two more. We wouldn't need to worry about Gardaí leaving if the government paid them properly and made it easier to join. I'll come back to the rates of pay, because I was taken to task yesterday with updated surveys of exactly what people are earning within the Irish state. And I was told, I did this last year, and they were saying, why don't you actually break down exactly what Gardaí earn? So I've done that, and I'll come back to it a little later on. Text 0868 104 106. Maureen, good morning. Sorry, my apologies. Let me get my lines right. So, Maureen, pick up on this one, the Australians poaching nurses, doctors and now Gardaí. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Neil. When I was listening to you yesterday, I was just thinking, like, the crisis in Ireland, the employment crisis, it's not the Australian government's fault. It's our own fault, really. And, okay, they're enticing our young people to go out there, but I don't see anything wrong with what they're doing, because we do the same. We entice Indians and Filipino nurses to come over here. And for years and years, we were delighted with the likes of Australia, who took our young people during depressions and when we had high unemployment rates. So it has to work both ways. We can't just say, okay, right, you know, you've had enough, stop. And it's also a lifestyle thing. It's not just wages they're going out there for. Like, my son is out north of Perth now, and he came home last July, and for the entire month, it rained solid while he was here. And he just said, why would you be here? You know?
But so, sure, like, because we travel a lot more and we see other sunny climates, we're assuming that we should have it on the western fringe of Europe, and right next to us is the wild Atlantic. Like, we're not going to ever have a Mediterranean climate.
No, we're not, but if the rain doesn't suit you, why not get out of here? I would see nothing wrong with it. And like when he was here, he was living at home with us, his parents. His intention would be to eventually buy a house. But how do you get to buy a house in Ireland if you're paying, you know, in excess of €1,000 a month in rent? You'll never get to save for the deposit. So if you go out there, you make money. You work hard, but you make money.
I don't disagree with any of what you've said. I think some of it had, my problem was the manner in which they were doing the advertising. It's called guerrilla marketing. They took a huge big sign, put it up on the back of a van, and then placed it between the courthouse and Anglesey Street and Anglesey Street Garda HQ, knowing that the most Gardaí would see it. Now, it's very effective for them, but at the same time, I was kind of concerned also that it's actually, we need to be very careful of our health and our criminal. You know, so this is health and crime that's being affected. Two very important problems that we have in Ireland at the moment.
Yeah, I understand that fully. But again, I think the Minister for Justice needs to, you know, step up, pay the Gardaí more, ensure that they're able to get accommodation if they are sent to Dublin. Like, would you like your son now to join the Guards in Ireland? I certainly wouldn't like any of my lads to join. It's not a nice employment anymore. It used to be you were part of the community and you gave bicycles to elderly gentlemen who needed one. But now it's a totally different ballgame. Youngsters, I've listened to their youngsters running riot inside in Cork City at the weekend, attacking Smith's toy store and places like that. Gardaí, there aren't enough of them. And I think there's more Gardaí leaving than they're recruiting, even though they say they're continually recruiting. They are. But there's more leaving in retirement. It's wage profile is pretty.
I want to say that I have the Gardaí's back. I try to have them because they get enough criticism as it is trying to do their job, right? But there was a survey done by the Irish Times, and this is from November of last year, and it said members of An Gardaí Síochána were the best paid employees in the state in the third quarter of 2023. It said that Gardaí enjoyed average weekly earnings, when you include overtime and irregular pay, of €1,579 per week.
Okay, I'm always listening to these statistics, and I used to be a civil servant for years, and they drive me mad because they were talking there the other day about the Secretary General who was going to earn over 300,000, and his salary is going to bring up the basic rate of every civil servant. Likewise, the Gardaí, I'm sure if you check out the top ranking guys and look at the starting wage of a guard, and if he may not get overtime, it's not a definite for a guard to get.
No, it's average. It's somebody who's in their first year and their 35th year, yeah, kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, but the average, like, is fine if you're going to get the overtime. An average is fine if you exclude the high paid Gardaí, the commissioners and all that. Take them out of the equation and you get a much lower salary then.
If you strip back the overtime and the extra irregular pay for regular hours and stuff like that, yeah.
And I respect every guard because I think they have a dreadful job to do. And like, I certainly would have their back because they have ours. But it's a tough number, and I wouldn't blame any young person for heading on a plane and going off out to Australia.
Okay, thank you, Maureen. Much obliged. Text 0868104106. Thanks for listening. Back after 10.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And so it will come as a surprise even to many members of An Gardaí Síochána, the report that came out at the back end of last year that said Gardaí Síochána members were the best paid employees in the state in the third quarter of the year. I think it's very unfair the way they worked out the actual amounts that they claim Gardaí can make, because they include overtime and they include a thing called irregular pay. I would like to see what the figure would be if it was average weekly earnings, full stop. But when they put all of these together into one big pile, it came out at €1,579 on average per week. Now, imagine if there are Gardaí listening to this morning, they're screaming at the radio, and I can understand why. Because the data says that was higher than workers in IT, higher than people in communication, who were traditionally the best paid in the economy. They were just ahead of them. So if they're saying an average guard with overtime pay, overtime and a regular pay, €1,579 per week. People in IT and communication were making €1,529 a week. And then on the hourly basis, then they were saying that the Gardaí earned an average of €30.38 per hour. So it's disappointing when you hear that, because imagine that there are many within an Gardaí Síochána, perhaps in the lower ranks starting out, will be on a fraction of that 1,579 they claim per week in the Irish Times. So the best paid private work, the best paid workers in the private sector were the people in information and communication. The best paid in the public sector, they're claiming, were Gardaí. In fact, those that earn over 1,000 per week in the survey include people working for the semi-state, working in health. Could you imagine them, people in health and the lower jobs within health, but the lower paying jobs within health, maybe in those working in housekeeping, cleaning, hygiene related jobs, portering, things like that, when they hear the average pay in health is €1,129 per week. See what I mean? I'm only mentioning that by comparison. Civil servants are over €1,000. Garda Síochána, €1,500. Anybody involved in health, they say, semi-state on average, well over €1,000. And then in the private sector, anybody in finance, insurance and real estate, nearly €1,250 a week. IT, €1,500 a week. Construction, just under €1,000. Again, that's just a wild figure, because some people in construction make less than that, but others in construction make an awful lot more than that. And that's just a breakdown. There were just some of the stats from an article that dug out again from the back end of last year, where they said the Gardaí eclipse IT as Ireland's best paid workers. Not very fair, though, is it? Text 0868104106 on Leo Varadkar. I'd hate to see what Leo Varadkar thinks is a bad place if he thinks he left Ireland in a good place. Another example of how these politicians are far from in touch with how normal people are struggling with the cost of living. On buskers, making buskers make their money after pub closing. Many buskers, I should say, make their money after pub closing time. 10 p.m. is too early and it's unfair. On the buskers, another piece of Cork gone. No singing, but you can beg away. Can you ask what the councillors voted, why the councillors voted for this? Well, it's not as if I'm reporting this morning that busking has been outlawed. It's just been regulated. I mean, micromanaged, I'd almost agree with, but certainly not outlawed. Cork City Council should put a budget aside to pay these guys to play, rather than having them beg for a euro or two on the streets. And then one or two more on the Gardaí. People wonder why Gardaí are resigning in their droves, and then you see this kind of crap. References to an article in The Independent where Garda accused of dangerous driving over the crash that killed three members of a burglary gang denies the charges and will face trial. This is a Garda who's been accused of dangerous driving for pursuing these burglar gang of thieves who then crashed their car and three of them died. And the guard now is being held culpable in this. Because it's a court case that's going on at the moment, you know, I can't give a personal opinion on it, but what can I say? Hi, Neil. I'm a current serving Garda. The organisation doesn't look after you. Everyone is sent to Dublin no matter what the family or personal circumstances. It may be okay for a 22-year-old from the middle of nowhere, but I'm from Cork and I can't make Dublin work. So I will be leaving on Garda Síochána shortly. It's a job I always wanted. The levels of work are also incapacitating. And you're constantly chasing your tail. And that's before the abuse starts in person and the abuse starts online. I'm done with it. There's a typical example of what it really is like to be a member of an Garda Síochána. And of course, because there's no joined up thinking, a guard like that could not come to an arrangement with his superiors and those who control the shots within an Garda Síochána to allow him to transfer back to Cork because Dublin isn't working. Oh, no, that's not a solution at all. The solution is that he leaves on Garda Síochána. And yesterday, we heard from a caller live on air who was saying that he knew of a young man who's able-bodied, fit, willing, plays sport, is already holding down a fine, good job in the private sector, 6 months ago applied to join on Garda Síochána and didn't even get an acknowledgement of his email. Calls on the way.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Leo Varadkar handed in his credentials as Taoiseach to Michael D yesterday, and amongst other things he said that he is leaving Ireland in a better place. Not everybody would agree. Earlier in the week I spoke with a Cork girl who moved back with her family from Australia to Ireland to try and make it work, and they couldn't and had to leave again. Just a couple of texts before I go back to the calls. I agree with your caller. My standard of living has dropped massively since we moved back to Ireland. Insurance, tax, medical, nothing from a country that I've worked in for over 20 years. Then to see people getting so much free stuff makes me want to head back to Canada. Well, I've said it before, those that work for a living, pay tax for a living, have nothing to show for it. I can relate to your callers. I lived in the UK for 10 years and didn't have to pay to see a doctor. All the prescriptions were only €9 each, regardless of the cost. When I was pregnant and for 1 year after the child was born, you don't have to pay for meds at all. I found it very expensive since we moved back. And then, just a quick one here from Paddy. He says, hi guys, it's Paddy. I'm in Guadamar, Spain, near Alicante. Look at this. And he sent me photographs of his breakfast. He says, 500 milliliter sparkling water, a latte, a Spanish ham roll and toast, €5 the lot. Half a litre of sparkling water, latte coffee, a Spanish ham roll and a fine looking ham roll and toast, €5. Petrol here is 1.36 a litre. Please can you say hi to my Irish friends, Diala, my Spanish partner, arrived yesterday and it's 18 degrees here, says Paddy. Yep, 1.36 for petrol and a fine old breakfast for a fiver. Probably change out of the fiver. Probably more likely to be $4.99. Keep them coming. And we spoke about, different types of scams and frauds that are out there. And one, I can't say any more about it. It's before the courts at the moment. But just to be aware, I was in Aldi in town yesterday, which probably was, would that have been Aldi by the Elysian, perhaps somewhere like that. I was in there yesterday evening and I was about to pay with my phone. A young man drifted up to within a foot of the card reader next to me, with his phone out. I was standing in front of the shop teller and then he moved up to the card reader on my left, messing with his phone and pointing it at close proximity to the card reader. I believe that he was trying to debit money from my phone once I activated it. You can pay with your phone. I politely asked him to move back with his phone and he did, with a little smile on his face. Not surprised by me at all. I'm positive he was trying to piggyback on the debit card that Aldi was charging me at the same time for my shopping. You can be damn sure it sounds like that to me as well. I mean, what other reason would a stranger have to be standing next to you as you're paying for your groceries at the end of the checkout? What other reason would he have there? He has no business to be there if he wasn't up to something that was clearly suspicious. Anyway, text 0868 104 106 to WhatsApp. We go, Martin, good morning.
Neil, good morning. How are you?
Thanks for holding. Are you a motorbike rider?
I'm a motorcyclist, Neil. Yeah, look, I just felt compelled to text in.
It's a little bit windy there now. I hope I'll be able to hear you. Just let me just mention to people, we're casting our minds back to a story from yesterday with this biker who comes up and down from East Cork at an insane speed, veering between traffic on the main motorway coming into the city, into Dunkettle. Are you here to defend him?
I'm not here to defend him, Neil, but what I'm here to say is that it's a very, very small minority of bikers, you know, and there are a lot of misconceptions around it. And to be honest with you, I think there are a lot more dangerous car drivers than bikers out there. I was up with a couple of buddies last Monday. I almost got creamed coming out of Murph's Bar heading for the Shamrock in Shambali, where I will state now, by the way, I was on 0.0 alcohol the same day.
I wouldn't doubt it.
A woman came down the dump road and turned out in front of me, and only for I locked up the brakes and went on the inside of her, I'd say I was seriously injured or killed. You know, an awful lot of them, Neil, are looking at devices and they're on phones and they have them stuck to their ear and they don't look where they're going, and it's very dangerous to be a motorcyclist in this climate, you know.
I agree with you 100%. On top of that, you've got crappy road surfaces, you've got shocking bad weather, and you've got motorists who don't give you the care and consideration that they should. However, you're compelled to text on behalf of good motorbike riders, but I can't ignore the guys who are just driving like lunatics on bikes either.
No, and I wouldn't ask you to, and I couldn't condone it, but I just felt compelled to say that it's a very small minority of bikers, you know. And as I said, there are misconceptions. Like, you won't find a tighter, better group of guys who look out for each other and help each other, you know. And I don't think you get that in any other motoring community. And they do an awful lot of charity work, you know. There was a rock, I'll give you a couple of examples. There was a rock night there in February in Killarney in Courtney's Bar. A couple of the guys I hang with there in the Crows, the Precon MCC, went down to support them. And it was for emergency care support, you know.
I know.
There was another one in Waterford. Well, it's supposed to happen this weekend with the Daisha Bikers. And they rally for autism. And the Precon themselves, they do one every year for Our Lady of Good Counsel. It's happening in May this year and it goes down to Killarney. And, you know, everyone on the day, as I said, is expected to bring 15, 20 euro. And, you know, guys do this out of the goodness of their heart. They fuel up their bikes and they go off down and, you know, they pay the money. And we meet up as a group and we have good fun and we have good crack on the day.
I know. And I'm not taking that for a moment and I'm not casting aspersions on the biker community at large. Did you see the video we shared, though, of this individual?
I did see it, yeah, to be honest with you. It is fairly hairy. You know, I have seen ones like it, you know, what they call ghost riders in tunnels on the continent, and this guy was every bit as dangerous or as crazy. But, you know, I'm only just here to make the point that it's a very, very small minority.
Is there a very good chance that ultimately, I know that, you're 35 years on a bike. Is there a very good chance that sooner or later this individual is going to come off that bike, he's going to crash, or he's going to cause others to crash?
Are probably a combination of both, yeah. And as I said, I can't condone it, and it is highly dangerous. And it's not just yourself you're putting in danger, you know. It's the other individuals driving on the roads.
Mm-hmm. How many have you even lost count of the amount of times that you've come across, as you, in your text, as you say, stupid or careless drivers who almost killed or injured you?
I could count them on one hand for every week of the year, I'd say, or two hands. And, you know, guys I hang with on bikes will all tell you similar stories.
Is it worth it, though, living with that risk?
Yeah, for me it is, because, you know, it's a huge part of my life. And as I say, they're a very tight-knit community. And, you know, as long as you're careful and you're clever, I'll be honest with you, I find I have better control on a bike than I do behind the wheel of a car.
Okay. Stay safe, my friend.
There's
thanks
more
for
responsive
listening.
Braking and faster stopping times.
Okay, and well done all to all of you guys
thanks
that do a
time.
Lot for charity. Take care, Martin, the bike driver, 35 years. Of course, I'm not saying for a moment that, anyway, I've said it, I'm not casting aspersions against all of them, but I still have to cover the crazy driving stories when I see them, whether it's a four-wheel or a two-wheel. Now, Leo Varadkar said yesterday as he was leaving office, words to the effect that he is leaving Ireland in a better place. He's leaving Ireland with a surplus of what? Surplus of what? Homelessness? Surplus of crime? I think he probably means surplus of money, and that he's going to take a well-deserved break. I agree with the back bit, enjoy the break, but as to whether he's left Ireland in a better place, certainly for sure, you can be damn sure that Sinn Féin and Donal O'Leary wouldn't agree with that. Nor would Sinn Féin's housing spokesperson, Ona Brin, makes the papers today saying that we need a general election. There isn't any party, big nor small, outside of government who isn't calling for a general election, so there's nothing new in that. But I just want to get to our phone lines, because Donal O'Leary will be heading into the Dáil, I believe, because today's the day anyway. Donal, good morning. What's destined to happen this morning? All of you guys will vote on the next T-shirt. You'll vote against it, but the government parties and independents will see him in. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And I suppose the government, as it was originally formed, no longer has a full majority. So they are relying on the votes of independents, and a number of independents from the regional group and some of the other independents will be supporting Simon Harris. So it looks as if Simon Harris will be elected Taoiseach today. What will happen then is, after he's elected Taoiseach, he will go to Orson O'Donnell to talk to the President, and a new cabinet will be appointed with the new ministers replacing the likes of Simon Coveney and those who have stepped away. Look, to be honest, I think people will be disappointed. I think people will be frustrated. I think we are not nominating Mary Lou McDonald for Taoiseach today. You know, we would have done that in the past. We're not doing that because we believe at this stage it's time for a general election. We're 4 years in, and you know, this government is now on its third Taoiseach in about 3 years. And on all the metrics, and you point to Leo Varadkar's comments, and I think you make the point well. Nobody disputes the fact that this is a wealthy country. Nobody disputes that. But it's what we do with that wealth is the question. And the fact is that on two of the most basic things that people have a right to expect from the government is failing profoundly. And it has been a record-breaking government in lots of ways. We have record-breaking levels of rent. We have record-breaking house prices. We have record-breaking homelessness, most grimly of all. And we have record numbers on waiting lists.
You can't do anything about rent, Dunica, because if you start controlling the private rental sector, which is the private rental sector, that will drive landlords out of the market faster than they're already been driven out. How are you going to fix that?
Well, there's a couple of things there. The first is that in terms of the rent relief, which is something that we pushed for a long time, for years and years, but the government came at it a day late and a dollar short, and that should be twice as much. It should be equivalent to a month's rent back in people's pockets, because people are being absolutely screwed. People are paying 1,800, 1,900. There are things that can be done to improve.
So are you saying that Sinn Féin and government will give 1 month's rent free every year?
Yes. Yeah, we would, in the form of a refundable tax credit. But the other thing is, you know, like, there are things that can be done to ensure that renters have more rights and more security and so on. You're right, there are limits on what you can do, but that is caused by the fact that they have failed to build enough houses, particularly social and affordable houses. And I would emphasise the affordable houses, like the targets that have been set for affordable houses here in Cork are pathetically low, about 100 a year for the city. We need much more than that, because there's so many people out there who are working hard, so many young people and so many young families who are working hard, and if they've done everything right, as they would see it, but they have no chance of being able to get a mortgage.
But, the way things are now, the climate that we have now really suits you perfectly. Yeah, it really does. This is a great opportunity. Homelessness, housing issues, rental issues. You couldn't have written the script better, because this is the only way you're going to get into power, because things are as bad as they are in those areas. So it's kind of, it's almost like a poison chalice. It's ideal for you that things are so bad.
Well, look, I mean, I would be of the view, I've been a member of Sinn Féin since I was 18, I would be of the view that our policies can suit any climate, and I suppose that we have a vision for Irish society, and I would distinguish us from other parties, because, you know, I think that other parties have differences in political policies and so on. I believe that we are a party that has the will and the ambition to change the course of Irish politics and indeed Irish history. So I would believe that whatever the climate, we are in a position to respond. But I am very certainly of the view as well, Neil, I'm very certainly of the view that no government that doesn't have Sinn Féin in it is ultimately going to tackle the housing crisis, because the will isn't there, the ambition isn't there. There is much too much reliance on private landlords and developers. And while there is a role for that, ultimately what we need is the power of the state to deliver large-scale, affordable and social housing on public land.
Look, there's a breakdown in The Independent this morning. Fine Gael promising 50,000 houses a year. The Social Democrats promising 50,000 houses a year. Sinn Féin promising 50,000 houses a year. You're all the same. They're all the same promises, just a different political party.
So I would say, Neil, that we have won the argument in terms of targets. There is no question about that, and the government have been forced to concede to the argument that we've been making for years.
But arguments and reality are two different days of the week. I'm coming
to that, Neil, yeah. Like, so we have won the argument on what the targets should be, and there was a lot of resistance to that, it should be said as well, and people felt that, you know, the targets could be smaller, and they haven't adjusted the affordable targets, particularly for places like Cork. But it's not just about the targets, it's about whether you can deliver those targets, which this government singularly have not, particularly in terms of affordable, but it's the type of houses, and what they are calling affordable houses, in truth, in lots of instances, are not actually affordable to people on low and
mid-income. Hang on a second, in 2021 they promised in the Housing for All strategy an average of 33,000 homes a year over the 10 years to 2030. So far, that number of new builds will meet or exceed the target.
Yeah, and like, I mean, I suppose in terms of the current plan, in terms of affordable houses, they haven't met the target. That is very, very.
Or maybe the target isn't high enough or fast enough.
Look, as I say, you know, we can talk about the targets. I think that the food government, you know, Simon Harris has now, in his speeches last week, has revised upwards the targets. The point is, are they going to be actually affordable for people? Are people who are out there going out to work today in Cork, are they going to be, or their family, are they going to be actually able to afford them? You can call something an affordable house, but unless, you know, it's something within your reach, then that's that's a fiction, that's a lie. Okay, that is what we intend to grasp. We intend to deliver actually affordable housing at scale, and that will be crucial, as well as measures to address rent to tackling the housing crisis.
Okay, they said at the Ardèche at the weekend that they would never go into government with Sinn Féin. In fact, one of them on the podium said that Sinn Féin cannot even count. What do they mean by that? That you can't do maths, is it?
Well, I think, you know, you look back over the last couple of elections, and I'm sure there's plenty of examples of Fine Gael struggling a bit with numbers. Look, Fine Gael will say a lot of things, and in terms of appeasing their base and their membership, I'm sure they'll say a lot of things like that. And, you know, they're also a party who said they wouldn't go in with Fine Gael, and indeed Fine Gael are a party who said they wouldn't go in with Fine Gael. We are being honest with people. We are going to talk to any parties that can deliver the programme that we feel is needed. We are going to talk to parties on the basis of, here are our targets, this is what we want to achieve for Ireland, for Irish society, for Irish workers and families.
Okay.
But I have to say, I wouldn't be terribly optimistic, Neil, that Fine Gael will be willing after the next election to agree to the measures that we think are necessary.
They've slapped your hand away on that. They're not interested. But, you know, maybe 8 or 10 months could be a long time in politics. Yet Simon Harris is hardly going to get his feet under the table today and then call a general election, though. You're whistling in the wind there.
Look, I mean, it's our view that that is the political imperative. We believe that that's what's necessary. That's what's for the good of the country, and that's what's going to deliver the change in policy that we need to improve Irish society, to give families the chance to be able to begin their lives, for people to be able to make ends meet. It looks today as if that's not going to happen, but we're going to keep the pressure on. The government has a maximum of 1 year to run. I wouldn't be expecting a great deal from Simon Harris. Whatever about his last portfolio in higher education, he was a disaster in health, and you can see the commentary from the time, the criticisms that people in cabinet with him now, people like Micheál Martin and MEP Billy Keller, the kind of things that they said about him when he was Minister for Health. They didn't raise him as a good minister.
Let's look at it from a Leaside point of view. I know you're under pressure. Last question, perhaps. Would you have rated Simon Coveney in his ministerial portfolios, fellow Southsider as yourself?
Yeah, well, like in some of them, like, I mean, I think, you know, in some respects he played a constructive role in Brexit, which was obviously, I suppose, an issue that, you know, we would have to some extent worked on the government.
I'm not asking you to claim, responsibility for anything. Simon Coveney a good minister?
I think in some of the portfolios, in terms of Brexit and so on, I think he did play a good role, and I would certainly give him credit for that. But when you look back to his tenure in the Department of Housing, I think that was, you know, singularly unsuccessful. And actually, after making big promises, the situation got much, much worse. And indeed, it's got much worse since. And I would say all Fine Gael ministers have a responsibility in terms of the shape of the country. It's not just portfolio, it's government as a whole.
Do ministers have a responsibility to their own constituency? Did he do enough, for instance, for Cork? He couldn't get the convention centre over the line in spite of many false dawns. I mean, do they have to be national, or do they have to follow the mantra that all politics is local and they drop the ball there? Maybe himself and Micheál.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that in terms of the event centre. But, like, I mean, I think you have a responsibility in cabinet to the country as a whole, and as a constituency TD to your constituency. I think, yes, Simon and his cabinet colleagues, Micheál and Michael, could have delivered an awful lot more for Cork. The event centre is but one example. I would think of Garda numbers on the street as well, which is really, Cork is constantly being overlooked for that. And we are, in my view, paying the price for that, because there's not enough visibility of Garda on the street. Look, I wish Simon well for whatever he has in the future, and I would have worked with him on some issues. As I say, in terms of Brexit, I think he did achieve things, but in the Department of Housing, I think there were very significant failings. And as a whole,
Do you know as to whether himself or maybe Leo Varadkar, but primarily Simon Coveney, will step away from politics, will run in the next general election, will go to Europe, go into the private sector?
I don't know that okay. Now that's very much a question for him.
Okay, and if you were in government right now today, right, and you were a serving minister within a Sinn Féin government, what would you do with regards to the event centre?
Well, look, I mean, I think clearly the problem, one of the things that we would be looking to do is tightening up the legislation on tendering. There's clearly...
No. That's a bigger picture stuff with regards to future tendering. I'm talking about the actual event centre itself. It's been tendered, well, tender's been agreed.
Yeah, I know. But I think, you know, lessons have to be learned from it, and the lessons have to be learned from the Children's Hospital as well. We can't have a situation...
Well, I'm not asking that. Would you pay BAM the money? Would you give Light Nation what they want, which could be upwards of 80 or 90 million of taxpayers' money?
Yeah, I think we do need to deliver the event centre. I think it's been very, very badly handled. I think huge errors were made in terms of the tendering. We want to see it progress. We would be keen to secure what funding is necessary to achieve that. But I think nothing like that should ever be repeated, and there needs to be serious tightening up in terms of public contracts and tendering.
Okay, Donica Lira, thank you. Covered a lot of ground. Donica Lira, Sinn Féin. Text 0868104106 on that one. Just quickly ahead of a break, as you know, Leo Varadkar departs as Taoiseach. He will be entitled to a once-off termination payment, according to Harry McGee in the Irish Times this morning. Departing Taoiseach Leo Varadkar will be entitled to a once-off termination payment of €280,000 if he decides not to contest the next general election. So that answers one of my questions. I don't know whether he will or not, but if he decides not to, €280,000. Likewise, Simon Coveney, who steps down as Minister for Enterprise today, will also be entitled to a similar severance payment if he decides not to run again in the next general election. €236,000. This is the walk away money. And again, you'd never get that in the private sector. You get it in RTE, and you get it in the Dáil and what have you. So a TD who steps down from cabinet is entitled to a maximum of 14 months' salary as a termination payment when they retire. Why don't they just go and get another job? Why do they have to get all this extra brass? So the Taoiseach salary at the moment is risen to 239,000. So he would have entitlement to payments then of 279,000 when he leaves the Oireachtas in total, €279,000. Now, as a former Taoiseach, he's also entitled to secretarial assistant worth up to €60,000 annually for, like, what, the rest of his life? He gets this secretarial assistance for €60,000. And he also gets VIP services at Dublin Airport.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now, 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, if Sinn Féin were in power right now, they would give BAM and Live Nation whatever extra money it would be to get it done. Whatever it would cost, they give it to them. Get it done and learn from the mistake. You know, you talk about getting things done and learning from it. I know that we're kind of talking really early days with regards to the, you know, this new reverse vending machine, as in you bring your plastic and your cans back and you get money or you get a voucher for them. There's a very good article in the Irish Times this week from Conor Pope, and he does the maths on it. Apparently, every single day, right, in Ireland, 5 million receptacles are sold each day that would qualify for a return, right? So there's 5 million every day. Now, the scheme is 50 days old, and in the 50 days, 16 million containers have been returned. And that, as Conor Pope says, does indeed sound like a lot. But it's still only 16 million of the 250 million receptacles that have actually been sold in Ireland in the past 50 days. Now, Conor Pope joins me by WhatsApp. Morning, Conor.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm good, and I'm assuming that you would agree that this needs to bed in, people need to get used to it, but from your article in the Irish Times and my Facebook post last night, an awful lot of people are bringing stuff to the recycling units and they're not working or working properly.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem. I mean, everyone accepts that these kinds of things will have teething problems, and, you know, that we're all getting used to it. And as you say, it has to be bedded in. But the reality is that it has to work. And if it doesn't work, you're going to soon lose the buy-in and you're going to lose the goodwill that you have amongst Irish consumers for this scheme. And on the surface and on so many different levels, this deposit return scheme is a good idea, because we have to stop generating as much of this plastic. We have to reduce the amount of plastic we generate. We have to recycle more of the aluminium. We have to recycle more of the tin cans. And we just have to be better at that. Now, we're not terrible, but at the moment, around 60-65% of the recyclable materials are recycled. We need to get that above 90%. And the government has decided this is the way that we should do that by incentivizing people, by making them pay their deposits and then getting the returns. But the scheme has to work. Now, when I contacted the return people last week about this, about what our readers' concerns, because she'd gone to multiple supermarkets and she'd found out that, you know, that none of the machines were working. So she had to go back to the supermarkets again and again and again. And they were saying 85% of the machines are working and that's all well and good. Now, 85%, Neil, sounds like a high number.
Yeah.
But it's not that high when you think that that means 15% of the machines aren't working. And if they're not working, 15% of the people who are trying to do the right thing are finding themselves discommoded, let down, and then they have to go back over and over again. And that's not good enough, because if the scheme is to succeed, it's going to succeed on goodwill and the goodwill of Irish consumers. And that's why it needs to work more efficiently.
Okay, this is Emer's story from Galway, time after time. Twice a week, every week, I bring my containers into one of the dozens of grocery stores in Galway City. I have yet to find a deposit return machine that is working and accepting cans. You've seen, you're a social media guy yourself, you've seen Sarah McInerney and her struggle with the plastic bottle, yeah. Have you? I mean, that's a joke.
Absolutely, it is a joke. And do you know what? It doesn't take long for us to reach a tipping point on things like this. So everyone can start off thinking, oh, well, this is a good idea, because effectively what we're doing is we're giving monetary value to rubbish, and we're stopping people throwing away the bottles and the cans that they might otherwise have binned. And those bottles and cans would otherwise have ended up in landfill, or they would have ended up at the sea or on our beaches. And as a result, that's a good thing. But it has to work properly. Mm. And the thing is, we as consumers need to do better when it comes to recycling. And I think we'd all accept that. And we need to be incentivized.
Yeah,
and that's the reality.
Garrod says, and I agree with him, before the scheme came in, I paid tax on the product of the till, and I paid for my recycling bin, say, from Country Clean, and I recycled everything properly. Now I'm paying a second tax at the till on top of those two. That's what it's really about. And I'm like him. We recycle everything properly. So why do we have to pay again?
The argument that you're putting forward there is an argument, and it's a conviction that's held by a great many people. And the reality is that the scheme probably isn't directed at you. The scheme probably definitely isn't directed at people who are consuming these products in the home. Because one of the easiest things in the world to do is to recycle your plastic and recycle your tins and your aluminium cans in the home. But the scheme is really aimed at the person who buys the 500 milliliter bottle of water, drinks it on the street, and then just chucks it into a bin. Or the person who buys four cans of lager, goes down to the beach, and then just discards the lager on the beach. Mm. Because what it does is, instead of that stuff being rubbish, that stuff suddenly has a monetary value. So that's the first point. That's one of the reasons the scheme exists. And I don't think anybody could argue with that. That's a good thing, that you would transform this rubbish into something that has monetary value.
Are you old enough as a child to remember that, actually? We made fairly handy pocket money back in the day.
Would you believe I grew up in Bishopstown? And I remember the shopping centre where Dunn's used to be. And me and my friends used to earn a living by bringing back the glass bottles into Dunn's there in Bishopstown every single week. And in a way, that's what you'd like to see happening with this scheme as well. You'd like to see kids or charitable groups, you know, picking up these bottles and using these bottles to generate funds for themselves. And when I spoke to the return people, that's one of the things that they envisage, that a community group might go door to door and collect all your plastic bottles that you just can't get around to delivering, and then use that money for social good. So that could happen. That has yet to start in any way in earnest, and I think that would be a welcome thing. Similarly, you could have kids, or indeed you could have people who are in really difficult financial situations, using this as a way to get money.
Okay.
And that, again, you see that in America, and it's a terrible sight that somebody is reduced to that. But that's the reality of our world. There are some people in very difficult circumstances. And if there's anything that can provide support, well, then I think that should be part of it.
So as a consumer champion, are you saying give it time to bed in, people will get used to it, is this return machine going to turn into a bit of a nightmare like charging machines for electric cars working?
Well,
or not
that's
working.
A very good point. I think what I'm saying is that the people behind the scheme need to make it work, and they need to do whatever it takes to make it work. Because if they don't make it work, it's going to lose the goodwill of people and it's going to fall apart. So they still have a chance to fix those machines. And instead of having an 80% or 85% or 90% success rate with those machines, it should be 100%. And if it's not, well, then they have to ask themselves the hard questions as to why not.
Okay.
And that would be my perspective.
Okay, and thank you for it. Just one final thing, because I read this particular paragraph a few times in your article in the Irish Times, and I just was just really gobsmacked at the price. It said, this is Linda Waters, who noticed that the price displayed on the supermarket shelf for a 12-pack of sparkling water was 85 cent. Is that right?
If she was buying 12 little bottles of sparkling water from a popular German discounter, the prices would be quite low on that stuff, because it isn't expensive. But the point about, I think she was making, is that she then has to pay an extra 15 cent on top of that for each bottle.
Oh, so it's 85 cent a bottle.
So I don't know.
The article says the 12-pack of sparkling water is 85 cent, and then you've got to pay $6.65 because you're adding 12 by 15 cent. But how in the name of God can anybody produce 12 bottles of sparkling water and sell it for 85 cent?
Well, if you go to this continent, that's how much that kind of bottled water costs. I mean, for donkey's years, Ireland has been paying probably too much for bottled water.
Totally too much.
Because if you go to Spain, if you go to France, the bottled water, but they have no choice. That's how they consume their water. It's much, much cheaper than it is at home.
Okay. That's very, very cheap, though. I was amazed at the price. Okay, let's get the public's thoughts on this. As always, thank you for taking the time, Conor Pope. Have yourself a good day. Didn't know you were born in Reardon, Bishopstown. We learn something new every day. Conor Pope from the Irish Times. Just read that again. 12-pack of sparkling water, 85 cent. You go to pay for it. It isn't costing you the 85 cent for the 12 bottles. It will, in fact, cost you €6.65. because you got to add the deposit on each of those 12 bottles, and each one of those bottles comes with an extra 15 cent charge. So in that case, the deposit that you get back is like what? Twice the cost of each bottle of water? I didn't know you could get water that cheap. Text 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Meant to mention this earlier in the week, or the back end of last week. A buddy of mine sent me a screen grab from Super Value, from one of the shopping aisles there. Talk about the difference in price. I was mentioning a 12-pack of sparkling water, where you get the 12 bottles of sparkling water for 85 cent for the lot. Divide 12 into 85, and what's it come out? Maybe 7 cent or something like that per bottle. But anyway, the comparison that he was showing me was from the custard aisle. And this is absolutely bizarre. So you have the Bird's custard, which would be the go-to, I suppose, the cream of the crop when it comes to custard. So the Bird's custard, €3.95. And this is the ready-made one in the Tetra Pack. So this is €3.95 for the Bird's custard. And just below it, on the shelf below it, is the Super Value custard. And it looks to me as if it's the same amount. And it's also in the Tetra Pack, 39 cent. So the Bird's custard, €3.95. And the Super Value custard, 39 cent. Firstly, you got to wonder how you can make it for 39 cent as opposed to €3.95. And then what's the taste difference like? Interestingly, when you look at the shelf with all the Bird's custards on it, and that's what we grew up on as kids. I love custard, incidentally. That's full. There isn't one of the Tetra Packs taken off the shelf, but below it, the Super Value one has at least 5 or 6 taken already from the shelf, probably more than that. But the difference is a decimal point. Instead of 3.95, it's 3.9. €3.95 for Bird's, 39 cent for Super Value. We need to do a blind test on this program later in the week. A Tetra Pack of heated Super Value and a Tetra Pack of heated Bird's. And we'll see if there's any difference in the flavours. That would be a bit of fun. Big, 10 times the price. 10 times the difference. Sharon, good morning.
Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good, thanks for holding. You wanted to pick up then on return vending and shopping. Go ahead.
Neil, I just wanted to raise the issue there about disabled people and elderly people that do online shopping, and they've no way of returning, because a lot of these people don't have access to cars or lifts, or they could be quite a distance from the stores and they're unable to return.
Yes.
They're unable to return them. So that means that
it's an added taxation that you're never getting back.
Yes, and over the year, that adds up to quite a lot. And these are quite vulnerable people in our society.
Could be a few hundred a year, couldn't it?
Their income would be, yes. Well, I know of someone, for instance, that they don't use the water in the house at all for cooking or anything like that because the water supply is so bad. So they would spend on the online shopping, they would spend €10 a week on water, but there's no way of returning it. And I contacted, I won't mention the name of the large supermarket business, and I contacted them about it and explained the situation that this person has been charged 10, sometimes €15 a week, and they're a very vulnerable person. And,
they're being charged 10 to €15 a week in recycling charges, is it?
In recycling.
That's very high.
I said that's a minimum of €520 a year that they're losing out on. And I said, there's no way of reclaiming. Now, I myself am a disabled person, Neil, and I can't drive. And if I could, I would help other people out. So I know myself, I'm in the same position.
Yeah.
But the problem is that when you go to the stores, a lot of the machines aren't working. So even if you did manage to get, you know, like for myself, I travel on public transport. So what I do is I would, even though I'm a disabled person myself, I'm lucky enough that I have a basket on my, my rollator to...
True, but you could go there with your stuff and it could be full, or you could go there with your stuff and it could be broken. What did the supermarket multiple chain say? Because you were asking, as this is on behalf of people who have online delivery, are you saying that the online delivery should take away the bottles, the plastic and the cans?
Yeah. And this is what I raised with the store, because I raised the issue with them. There's two things I raised with them. One was... like my own situation where I've had to travel on the bus, which I have had to travel a few miles to the store on the bus, but I'm lucky because I have a basket, but not everybody would have a basket. And a lot of people wouldn't be able to get out. But when I went to the store, the machine wasn't taking the bottles back and the girl on the customer service wouldn't give me a refund. And I raised the issue in the store that... for the smaller shops that don't have the vending machines, if you purchase bottles there, you can return them and they give you the refund over the counter. The smaller, I don't want to mention any of the stores and that thing, because I don't know if I'm allowed to mention them or not, so I won't. But the smaller stores will give you the refund over the counter. And I says, but the bigger stores aren't. So,
what are the bigger stores doing? I mean, how do they do it?
Well, that's what they said, that I should have been refunded. And I said, well, then you need to make the staff aware of that.
You have to get a voucher or cash, isn't it?
Yeah, but the day I went down, I ended up having to leave the store and bring the bag of bottles back on the bus.
Because it was broken.
Because the machine wasn't taking them, yes. And the floor was not for me a refund. But that's for the like that was one part of it. But for other people and elderly people, or for people that live in rural areas that are miles and miles away, I think it's a very important point that Mr. Ryan, when he brought this rule in to help with recycling, which we're a brilliant country for recycling anyway, Neil, that when he brought this rule in, there was an exception made for people. They weren't thinking of people that are living in rural Ireland. They're not thinking of people that have disabled or elderly and have no access to the shops. Therefore, that's why they rely on online shopping. But what are they supposed to do? Because you get your shopping delivered every week. But if you're paying €10 every week for water bottles and things like that, surely when you're getting your next delivery, they could put it in place to take that shopping, take those bottles back.
Did they say that they were considering anything like that?
No, because I spoke to the store, it's one of the biggest stores in, grocery shoppers in Ireland, and they said no, because the government hasn't implemented anything to cover anything on that scheme.
Okay.
And just one last point, Neil, which is, that person that I'm mentioning about, like, obviously I'm not going to mention the name, but like, to give you the example, so say there's somebody living down the country or like in, they're in a rural part, and then they get the online shopping and then they can't, they've no access to dispose of all the plastic, so they have to push it in their recycling bin. So they've paid for it on their shopping, they've paid they've paid for whatever size bottles they are, so they've paid for that, they've paid for the recycling bins, but now because they're putting excess into their recycling bins above the weight, they're now having to pay more on the recycling.
So they're paying more twice, absolutely. No, that's a, that's, yeah, good points, well made, and thank you for it. Much obliged, Sharon. That is a glaring omission, for sure it is. Get involved in the conversation. Text 0868104106. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork, back after 11.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation that matters. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. So it's kind of almost like 50-50. Many of the comments so far, whether it's this morning or indeed online, we asked the question last night, how's it working out for you? I gave you a few of the texts already. My seven-year-old loves popping to the shop and dropping in the bottles and getting her payout. I love that we're teaching her recycling. It's important for the environment. I love that she's so proud doing it. And I love that she gets some money for it. I do drive around like a crazy bottle lady for a few weeks, which is a pain in the bum. But overall, I like that we are setting this example for her. Good for you. Maybe it could be a case that you could incentivize a son or a daughter to take on the job, and they keep the money themselves, a form of pocket money, or might instill into them a good working ethic. Do you know what I mean? Laura says, I have no issue with the machines, returning them, but having to keep them separate and then bring them to somewhere is a pain. When the recycling bin is sitting outside the door and I'm paying for it the same price as before. Absolutely, I'm with you there. The recycling bin is there, we are paying for it. Now we've got an extra bin, I suppose, or a bag in the utility room, or a bag stuck against a press in the kitchen or something, unsightly old things. Helen says, they're never working when I go shopping, so I usually end up shopping while carrying empty bottles around. It's a pain hanging on to the bottles to return them, particularly when the machines don't work. Hassle. Noel says, I bought a Dunn's gift card for groceries and added our return receipt to it. And that's a way of starting to save for our Christmas shop. Anywhere we try these machines so far, they've been working fine. But for wheelchair users and small kids, there is a height issue. Yeah, for the smallies, they mightn't be able to make pocket money because they can't get up to the receptacle. Geraldine says, I find them great. I use the one in Tesco in Mahon Point. No problem with them. Wayne says, I use them 3 times so far. No issue at all. To be fair, many, many other countries use the same system and it works for them. So I'm not sure why we should find it difficult. I wonder, do they have municipal bin collections where it's included in their taxation, those other countries? Or do they have to pay for private bin collections as well? Just another chore I have to do every weekend after work and all week, Neil, bringing recycling to get my money back. I already pay for my recycling to be taken from my house, and it's more convenient for me to be taken from my house, but now I'm paying for some of it to be taken and the rest I have to take myself because my money was held to make me go into a scheme that is just making more work for me to get my original money back. Where is the unclaimed money going, I wonder? Well, take a guess. Colin says, this whole thing is just more hassle than it's worth. For me, everything goes in the bin. And two final ones. Paolo says, I find the return machines in Fomoy great, particularly the Super Value one, never fails me. And Rosemary, we're already paying for our general waste, recycling, food, glass bins to be collected from our front doors. Why would we go traipsing around with bottles? Most people have enough to do as it is. Well, the reason that you go, you probably are doing it all already and you're doing it fine at home with all your different coloured bins. The reason you'll be go traipsing around now with your bottles and your cans is to get your hard-earned money, which you were charged extra, back again. Back after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. Back to text with regards to the drain on our Garda Síochána who are being tempted away to Australia. This drain of our qualified oven-ready professionals needs to be seriously looked at. Of course, government failure of a housing system is not helping, but we need at least 2-year retention when qualification has been reached, as the taxpayers put in a lot of money into training these people. A bit of payback is only fair, that you have to stay in the job if you're trained at the behest of the state for at least 2 years. Would you blame folks from going to Australia and leaving the over-controlling EU, where soon we won't be allowed to drive a car? Plus, it's turning into a third world SHIT hole. I don't think we have any right to be annoyed with these recruitment drives. If Ireland wanted to keep these professionals in the country, it would make the conditions and pay more enticing to young people to stay. You can't blame anyone for leaving if they're going to get better pay and housing, etc. What about the text from the Gard this morning from Cork, who's now based in Dublin, saying that all of the Gard either coming out constantly are sent to Dublin. In fact, Simon Harris at the weekend, one of the first things he said he was going to do was put together some kind of a special crime commission for what? Or for where? For Dublin. To tackle the crime in Dublin, as if there isn't anywhere else in the country. They can take as many guards as they like, because I don't find them useful anyway, which is a broad sweeping statement by GP and Blarney. He says they're only good for collecting revenue for the state with motoring fines. Even at 60 grand, a Garda would struggle to buy a home and make a living in Ireland. Even at 60 grand, says a texter. Compare the army or the navy wages to that of a Garda, and the army had guns long before cops. The Australian police starting pay is only €34,000. What are you talking about? The cost of living there is worse than here. Well, I'm only telling you what it said online with regards to the starting pay for a police officer in Australia. I think I read out somewhere between €50,000 and €60,000. If you think that's wrong, well, I don't know what to tell you about that. Our daughter's 19 in college at the moment. She's working. She applied for the guards 3 months ago. She did the psychometric test, passed it, and has heard absolutely nothing back 3 months later. So there's another example, but at least she did some kind of a test. Yesterday, the young man who applied 6 months ago, hasn't heard a single word. They don't want Irish people being guards anymore. Diversity is our strength, remember? Inquire how many foreign nationals are going through Templemore at the moment. I could have a look at that and see, just to quest your thirst for knowledge. Back to the phone lines we go, though. Pick up the phone, 0818 104 106. Colin, good morning.
Morning, Neil.
There's talk now. Are you a Cork man? Are you a Dubliner? There's talk now that Dublin wants to do the equivalent to the English market, and they're saying they're going to do it better. Are you aware of that story?
I am, yeah. There's markets. I mean, you get completely over the top about the English market.
Every
city in Europe has a market equivalent to or better than the English market.
Okay.
Jeez, you walk through the middle of the English market in October, November, and it's perishing. I mean, you have to gather your coat around you as you walk through it. There's nothing special about it. And the streets of Cork are semi-derelict. And I've been living here 50 years. So, yeah, maybe I'm not a true Cork fan, but I think I've breathed enough of a dare to make me one.
All right, well, never mind about the rest of Europe. There is nothing like it in Ireland. You would agree with that, though. It is exclusively a Cork market that has never been replicated anywhere in Ireland.
What do you mean by that? You mean just a building with a lot of stalls in it? There was the Georgia Street Market in Dublin. There's loads of markets.
There is or there were. Do they exist?
Well, they don't exist now, no. But
the proof is in the pudding. The longevity of the English market shows that it is exclusively Cork. No one's managed to replicate it. They may have tried, but they didn't manage to keep them open.
Had any closed in the last 12 months?
How many of the little shop units?
Yeah.
There's some clothes.
I mean, Market Parade, Market Lane, you know, the small one that runs onto Patrick Street.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, half of that's empty.
Yeah.
There used to be a gorgeous Chinese restaurant there upstairs. Beautiful spot.
There are still some lovely shops in that little parade that takes you out onto Patrick Street. There's a lovely little coffee shop there, for instance. But I'm not arguing the toss with your persue as to how many's open and how many isn't. We're very proud of it, you know, and we're very protective of it.
Yeah, did you walk down Patrick Street recently?
Yes, I walk a couple of times. I'll be down there later on.
And many hoardings did you sort of trip over, or steel girders holding up buildings did you have to walk around? It was disgraceful. We've got people arriving next week from Victoria in Vancouver Island. I mean, it's an embarrassment to even take them down Patrick Street, or especially North Main Street.
Okay, well, maybe that's just one or two areas that you should try and avoid, and go to Oliver Plunkett second. Go to Oliver Plunkett Street and make your way up over Patrick's Bridge onto McCurtain Street and areas like that.
So we wait for the ghost. We park somewhere. We wait for the ghost bus to bring us down to get into Oliver Plunkett Street, but then we have to go to Patrick Street to get the bus home again. So we're going to see Patrick Street.
And I get what you're saying. I'm also thinking while I'm listening to you about the state up around Shandon Street and the Butter Exchange in and around there, the Firk and Crane. Yeah. A lot of dereliction, looking very tired and shabby for many years. I would love it if it weren't that way, because I'd be very proud to bring people up there. For sure I would. But I'm still very proud of Cork, and I kind of get my back up when people criticise it, you know? I really do.
You see, this is the same problem as that lady you had on a couple of weeks ago, who was supposed to be managing the city. You know, I mean, the mismanagement of the city is more like it. I mean, what would she do about all the derelict buildings? Change the direction of the traffic again so we don't see it?
No, I get all of that. I know. I mean, we got onto a bigger picture now. I was talking about the state of Patrick Street and derelict buildings and everything. All I was saying this morning was the Dublin thinks it can do better than the English market. They tried in the past and failed. They're going to throw 26 million euro at their new market that they say will be better than the English market. I don't think you can throw money at something and make it better than something that's there 300 years with the history and the heritage that the English market has. That's all I'm saying. I'm agreeing with you on the other aspect.
Yeah. You won't buy heritage. I mean, heritage only comes with years of being open. And until they open it, they can't even try to achieve heritage.
They're making a very brazen claim that they will be able to do it, and that they're going to do it even better than the English market in Cork when they get going. So clearly they're envious of it.
Of course, absolutely. I mean, that's what you aim for, isn't it? The peak. The peak in Ireland would be the English market.
Well, you agree with me on that then, at least, that the peak in Ireland is the English market. The standard to reach of excellence.
I said the peak in Cork. There's a pretty good one up in Belfast, but we won't go there.
Okay. And how long are you here?
56 years.
Oh my God, that's a lifetime in itself. So this for you is certainly home then.
Yeah, apart from the real good old days, early teens.
Yeah. So, I mean, like anybody who's here over 50 years, you've seen colossal change over those five decades.
Oh yes, I mean, I used to remember the smell of fish on a Friday and the turf fires burning and that. You know, the Greens got rid of most of those things.
Yeah. Do you shop in the English market at all?
Occasionally, yes.
Okay. So apart from the cold, which is a winter problem we have in Ireland anyway, there is no real criticism apart from the cold in the winter.
Well, there's not a huge selection of shops, is there? I mean, there's nowhere to really sit down. And there's not. I mean,
you can get fruit, you can get vegetables, you can get spices, you can get food from all over the world, whether it's fresh or whether it's bottled or canned. You can get fish. You have a magnificent cafe. You've got wonderful food upstairs in the farm gate. This is just you can get cheeses. That's off the top of my head. The most beautifully fresh baked bread. What else do you want?
I don't know offhand.
All right, okay. Okay. Well, when you think of something, come back to me, will you?
I will. I get on to the county council or the city council and see if I can open the stall.
All right. Well, come up with a good idea. You never know. You might get yourself a pitch. Thanks, Colin. Text 0868104106.
Call Neil now. 0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
You guys are doing the maths and you're right. It must have been a misprint in the Irish Times saying you get 12 bottles of sparkling water for 85 cents. You just couldn't, because the actual charges on it were way too high for the 12 of them being 85. 0.75. So thank you to everybody who's been texting on that. More likely to have been 6 multiplied by 500 mil sparkling waters for 3.99 or 2.99 or something like that, but not 12 of them for 0.85. But anyway, just one or two more here. I'll take that call now. Just 2 seconds. I got to Sean. Just two quick calls, text there from issues involving the public sector or working as a Gardaí. Just a quick one. There was a time when I was serving in the naval services and there was an opportunity for some staff to apply for the Australian Navy. Also, in addition to that, why don't the guards go after the likes of the droves of well-trained personnel that are leaving the defence forces every month? Maybe they get them to join the guards. Personally, I was going to go into the Irish Gardaí, but there's no way to support a family and a home with the wages on offer and training. Thanks, and keep my name out of it, please. That's very interesting. Bear in mind now that the job in Australia for a serving Garda to go down there, with the rates of pay being better, also comes with accommodation provided. Could be a house in rural Australia or an apartment, you know, or some kind of living conditions like an apartment or maybe a duplex or something in an urban area, but it comes with accommodation. I mean, that's a huge incentive. Take one look at the weather and our government and what's going on in Ireland. Of course, life's better in Australia for your mental health alone, never mind your financial well-being. I lived there, and I'm sorry I ever came home every day since the last 10 years. Australia is a great country. Every young person should experience it, says James. Love to chat to you on air, James. If you ever want to take a call, just text me back. Text 0868104106, because I'd love to develop those thoughts of yours. I work in Stryker. There are more guards, army and navy who have left Stryker to join us. There's more money and there are more benefits. They're not all just emigrating. Now, wow, that's a powerful text. Somebody in Stryker saying that when they're leaving the likes of the Navy, the Army or the Guards, that they're joining the likes of Stryker, where there's better money and better benefits, not necessarily just emigrating. Thank you for that. Text 0868104106. Busy morning. Sean, good morning.
Good morning.
Regarding Dublin's attempt, yeah. Your words, not mine, regarding Dublin's attempt to replicate the English market, go ahead.
I think it's very nice of them, because it reminded me what Oscar Wilde said. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery that mediocrity can pay to greatness.
I love it, so man. I love fantastic. It.
We're great.
Yeah. I suppose, what is it? Trying to copy you is actually a compliment.
It is the highest form.
Imitation is the serious form of flattery. Do they really and truly think that by spending 26 million, maybe they're right, maybe we live in a fake world anyway, that everything's fake, that they could replicate the equivalent of an English market that took 300 years to get it to where it is now?
Well, if they want to start, they'd have to build a full-scale replica model of Cork up there, brick by brick. See how they get on with that. And I hear the politicians are mad to go building, so they can build a way up in Dublin.
What did you make of our caller just a second ago there on the air, Colin, who was quite critical of it? He came around. I think it kind of warmed him up a little bit in the end, but he was quite critical of it and the city as well.
Well, it's nice you said you can't throw money at and try and create heritage that's been there hundreds of years.
Like, what can't you buy within reason with regards to maybe, food and produce in the English market? You can get everything you need. You really can, whether it's chicken or meat. Do you go?
I'm in the suburbs, so I kind of shop around there. But when I was living in the city, I used to shop there regularly.
Good point. In the words,
it's nice you get some cover from the rain as well.
Absolutely. Oscar Wilde said it best. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. Bring on the challenge then. Let's see what they can do with it, all right?
Yep. Let's look.
Nice one. Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Colin. Pick up the phone, 0818104106. A lot of people email as well. I was chatting yesterday with regards to people who find themselves homeless. You might remember that conversation. Amongst other things, we were also checking in on the situation with Sean Meehan above in his log cabin, back in court again in June. It's a disgrace that man can't get planning on his own land for his log cabin, yet planning was given out without question for a 30-metre high telecommunication 5G mast. No locals were informed. There are three houses within 100 feet of it. And this is our view 50 feet away. And they've sent me a photograph from their front gate or front door of this ginormous 5G mast. So that man couldn't get planning, but the council has no problem with this eyesore. And even the antenna hasn't been added to the top of it yet. Can't come on air, but there's a community meeting Tuesday night at 8 p.m. in Kanturk, in Kilbrin Community Centre, called by locals just about this alone. So planning was given And I'm just wondering, did you object at that stage? And were any of the objections to that mass taken into consideration? Do let me know how the public meeting goes. And then by email with regards to Sean Meehan. First of all, I want to say how sorry I feel for the man and his worries over his log cabin on his own land. This should not be happening, considering the amount of Irish homeless and our own housing crisis. He's not asking for anything from anyone, only to provide for himself his own home. Secondly, and thank God he's gone, Leo Varadkar said Ukrainians were coming here as Ireland was the furthest country away from Russia. Have we suddenly moved geographically closer to Russia now? Since the social welfare for Ukrainians has been cut, the numbers coming in have gone way down. Emailer says from 700 a week to around 20 a day. Don't know if that's accurate. If it is, it's a massive drop. The Department of Integration said every week Ukrainians are leaving state accommodation to either find somewhere to live themselves or to go back to Ukraine. So if they can go back, why are they here in the first place? The Irish taxpayer has been taken from mugs. No point in asking what would be done for the Irish dying in doorways. We all know the answer to that one, Neil. And as for the international protection orders, anyone's allowed in. We're a small 26-county island. Well, 32 if you count the whole one. How long can we support this carry-on? Ellen McEntee said in February that the majority of people coming into Ireland from these countries to claim international protection in the last 2 years had their applications refused. But they've been refused because they're coming for economic reasons. Have they been deported, though? Meanwhile, the Irish are leaving in their droves, and I wonder why. I'll give out my personal details for obvious reasons. It's a crazy world out there. I won't do that, but I thank you for your email and your thoughts. Pick up the phone, text 086-8104-106. You can also email Neil at redfm.ie. For all other business, of course, I'll be coming back to a lot more of those texts tomorrow because I've got lots of them on different topics, whether it's driving, whether it's Sean Meehan's log cabin, whether it's the state of the economy or issues like that, or indeed whether it's the vending machines for the likes of bringing back your plastic and your cans. But you can pick up the phone on 0818 104 106 nonetheless. I did read out a story earlier on this morning with regards to a Cork-based restaurateur who will be jailed next month for attempting to sexually exploit a child. This individual... Mehmet Umit Pala had thought that he was talking to a 13-year-old girl because during the conversations online, it was said to him on a number of occasions that I am a 13-year-old girl, to which he replied at the time, I don't mind age. Actually, he was not talking to a 13-year-old girl. It was a sting. It was a Canadian peace police officer who undercover repeatedly told him, I'm a 13-year-old girl. So there was a guilty plea, I believe, in parts of this, and that's the reason why now the judge has said that there will be this man will be going into custody, but he was given some time to conclude certain business matters, such as putting appliances in storage, because he had two restaurants. One was a Turkish restaurant and one was an Italian where he operated on the North Main Street, and he closed them since it came to light. But it does show, really, it shines another very much worrying light being shone on, you know, the whole world online and what young people really have to deal with, where they genuinely think they are talking to other young people of a like-minded age. There was a lot of talk recently now this could be TikTok, it could be Facebook, it could be Snapchat. Now, Snapchat's a worrying area, apparently, because Snapchat can be a place where online predators are engaging, or they're grooming, or they're sending sexual messages, or they are creating these different sites. Seamus Whelan did a right deep dive into this recently and found many dating sites for 9 to 18-year-olds, dating sites for 9 to 18-year-olds, even younger than that. And a lot of them then are other ones that don't use the word dating, but there are sites where young people go on to try and find friends. Back in the old days, it might have been maybe pen pals and what have you. Typical example. I'm 14 years old. I'm looking for a boyfriend. I live in Australia. I care about people and I treat them with respect if they deserve it. And I'm looking to be lonely no longer. This person who put that up actually was a grown adult man and used the photograph of a young girl. So this is the kind of thing that young people have to contend with. And I remember talking in the past with Amanda on the air with regards to her own daughter. Or was it her own son? I'd have to check back in again. But I remember she came across some of the conversation threads that her own child was going through. And it was totally obvious to her when she looked at them that her son or daughter was actually talking to an adult. Amanda, good morning. It was your son, wasn't it?
Oh, good morning, Neil. Yeah, that's right, it was. It was my son.
Yeah.
At the time, no, he was only, I think, 11.
Yeah. And did he come to you and say, did he kind of almost confess to being worried or bothered about it? It was Omegle at the time, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. It was just, you know what, no, like, at the time, there was himself and his friends in school. And he wasn't actually even gone into secondary school at that time. He just came to me and explained that he had been getting these messages and he was talking to his friends on this. And then he just decided to say, "Mam, look, can you take a look at this? Because I don't know what it's about." And I said, "Sure, give me the phone there and I'll have a look." Now, he didn't have a phone on a constant basis at that age, but all the friends were starting to get into talking to each other through games online and things like that.
Yeah.
And it was all linked through my own account so I could keep an eye on everything.
But what were the conversations like? Just give us a gist. And was there photographs, pics?
No, they sent photographs first. So it started off as a chat on Omegle. Then the person asked for the Snapchat name, and that's when his alarm bells went off then and said, "Mam, I don't know what this is." And I said, "Show me." I took over the conversation and pretended that I was still the child.
Right.
Left the person know that I was young and I was a child, and explained that I wasn't sure if it was the right thing to do or not. So I continued anyway to give the Snapchat name and allow him to join my conversation in Snapchat.
Okay.
Still acting as the child.
And now, remember, your son was 11 at the time. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I kept repeating that over and over. They wanted, basically, to engage in a conversation that was disturbing, to say the least. The language that they used was very vulgar for a child. And I won't repeat it on air now, the things that they said, but it's something that a child wouldn't even understand how to answer.
Now, this person who was doing this and you were engaging in was pretending to be what or who?
Oh, a man.
We knew that, but did he not put up a false persona that he was an 11 or 12-year-old boy or girl? No.
No, nothing. Nothing like that. However, I kept letting him know that I'm an 11-year-old boy and I don't think my mom would like me talking to him. And he continued to say, "Oh, I'm sure she won't mind, but we won't tell her."
We won't tell her, huh?
Won't tell her. Trying to keep it a secret. Wanted me to send a picture of myself, of the boy, the 11-year-old boy, wanted me to show my private parts. And then the messages started to come in, the images.
You mean he then starts sending explicit genitalia, nude pictures?
Completely, yeah. Very, very volatile. So then, as them pictures came in, he continued to ask me, "What kind of pyjamas am I wearing? What am I doing?" Just said to me that I'm laying on my bed here.
I'm doing this, A, B, and C.
Yeah. And can you do this?
You must have been sick.
I was raging, Neil. Because, do you know what? I knew at this point, this is where online safety comes into it. And that's what I've been constantly telling my son at that age, you know, this is a dangerous world and you're open to anything. So I was lucky that he came to me when he did.
I know.
That I had the control of taking over this conversation. So when I confronted him and
a
said
man.
That I am not a man. And you could tell from the images that he was sending, like he had his hands were in the image as well and his private parts and stuff. And you could tell he was a grown man.
Okay, so when you confronted him
So when I confronted him
as a mother,
as a parent, it didn't faze him in the slightest. He just sent back like humorous kind of comments. I'm a ghost. You can't find me.
Oh, yeah. And to some extent, how right he is.
Yeah, sure. He could have been in any part of the world. He could have been your next door neighbour. You just don't know. You don't know where this predator is.
Okay.
But the scaring thing about it is that, like, these chat groups could be operating in any part of the world.
They're operating now as we speak, because Seamus Whelan came across loads of them. He actually joined one or two of them, reported many of them. And they subsequently have been taken down, in fairness to him. I know others have as well. James Toomey from the Boys and Girls Are Knocking.
That's horrifying for any parent. Because I remember at that time of the experience that I went through, wondering, is this man actually targeting my son specifically? Or is it just someone that he came across? Or is it just, is he going to come back as another person? He has information. I had to change everything, you know, and really sit down and talk to my son about it all. And at this day and age, like, he's 14 now, Neil, and, you know, they have a different mentality at this age, the teenagers, and they can mess around with it too.
Well, at least in that incident or that period of time back a few years ago, you managed to keep him away from it. You saw it. He didn't. He didn't have that experience very young.
No.
You know, obviously, it would have really scared him and very frightened. It is assault. It is assault.
Yeah.
So, in that sense.
You know, there's nothing that you can literally do about it.
Yeah, I know.
I know I went to Clareburn Live as well, and all I could do really was just make people aware of it.
Okay,
because
good.
Because I didn't even know the site time.
And thank you. I
wasn't even aware of it, just like these ones.
Yeah.
I'm terrified now to think, Neil, that this is a more up-to-date thing and this is going on in the background, because I'm like, people will have sleepless nights over this.
I don't know how it ultimately would be ever plugged with regards to, say, Snapchat or indeed, Instagram or Facebook or X. But thank you, Amanda, thank you so much for sharing the story. I do appreciate it. You're very kind. James Toomey is with the Boys and Girls in Knocka. What do you make of that, James? That story?
Morning, Neil. Yeah, man, that was disturbing to listen to that there, to be fair, wasn't it?
Yeah, sure. And you think that's typical of many, many experiences of young people?
I'd imagine so. Look, just taking my own daughter into consideration, she's Snapchat, she's 12, she's on TikTok, but we monitor it, you know. So, yeah, it's scary to know. I mean, it's wide open for your children to anyone in the world, like Amanda said there, you know. It is that frightening. It definitely needs to be monitored. So, I was even talking to a friend of mine a while back about maybe the schools could do something at an early age, maybe first year, you know, internet safety, you know.
Talk to me about what you engaged with some of them. What are they? They're purporting to be, like, I have reams and reams of photocopies of different things, dating sites for 9 to 18 year olds. I'm 13 years old, looking for a friend, using someone else, a child's photograph to catfish. Where do these sites come from?
I have no idea. Well, just the weekend there, I was tagged in one from a group member from the Boys and Girls in Knocka. I have a look, and I went in. That was that 9 to 18 year old one, and I joined it briefly for a second, and I actually got a bit of a fright, and I left it again. But I managed to get a couple of screen grabs. I sent a few on to Seamus there as well.
Where were these? Were these on TikTok? Were they on Snapchat or what? Or
Facebook? It was Facebook.
Dating for 15. Yeah. So they create the thing. Here's a typical one: dating for 15 and 16 year olds. This is clearly a paedophile adult would have set this up.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I managed to get a snap of the admins of that page, and there were three Asian guys on it, if you want, you know. I mean, I'm not saying all the Asian, but they were the three admins on the page. I think I sent the screen grabs on to Seamus.
I have them here in front of me. I have screen grabs of one or two grown men who actually are the predators, right?
Yeah. And it was disturbing, and I just shared it on the Boys and Girls and Knocka. And I said, look, I'll share this, and people can get complaining about it. But I think what kind of grab, what got to me more than anything was the length of time that page was up, it was like 6 months, was active for 6 months. And now when I did get into the page, I saw lots of comments from adults, parents saying, get this page down, delete, report it to Facebook, and Facebook weren't doing nothing. Facebook were coming back saying it doesn't go against the community guidelines.
It doesn't?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because I did it myself, and I got a message back the next day. The page, the group doesn't go against community guidelines. But I was speaking to someone about it, and they said, you can't report, you need to report the content that's on the page, not the group itself, you know.
But you see, you're not really going to see the individual contents, because these paedophiles would go into, would direct message, or would be private conversation.
Yeah, they're not going to be active live on the page. Absolutely, you're 100% right there. Yeah, it would be DMs, whoever kind of, if a kid did get on it, you know. But yeah, look, they're out there, and then I learned that there were pages up there as long as 10 years. Similar pages, you know, afterwards.
They'll appear to be legit for the landing page, if you like, dating sites 9-year-olds to 15-year-olds. But it's what goes on then when contact is made.
Exactly.
Is where we're really into the dangerous ground, where the pictures
that's
are.
That's what you don't see unless you're a vigilant parent and you check your child's internet, you know, if they're a young age, you know. Yeah, it's a scary world, really, for kids. Like I go back to what I said, maybe the schools could do something about internet safety for children. Maybe start with fifth class going into the first year or something. Because, like, I mean, it's a minefield for parents as well, because, you know, I know you'll be on about the child's privacy, but at the same time, as a parent, they really don't have any privacy at 9 or 10 years of age on the internet, but they shouldn't anyway, you know.
Mm.
You should be able to see all their activity.
Mm. Like, we were back and forth with the likes of Facebook. Seamus was in touch with them, coming across, gave them examples of all of the different accounts. The one that you mentioned that's been there for 6 months, and he was back and forth for a few days. They came back and spoke about, you know, how they try and handle their approach to child safety. The child exploitation is a horrific crime. They work aggressively to fight it. They report the content to the National Centre for Missing and Exploited Children. They focus on preventing, control and responding. And I'm sure they're genuine in all of that, but they're words at the end of the day, you know?
Absolutely. I mean that page being reported, it's actually 9 to 18-year-old dating. That's the page, the one that we came across. I mean, the only thing is there for them to see, dating for 9-year-olds to 18-year-olds. I mean, that's straight enough, should have been whipped down straight away, you know, and the first complaint.
So those key words then, as opposed to leaving it up there, where they have 1,200 members and 132 posts in one day alone. I mean, that's...
Yeah. No, I'd imagine a lot of those 132 posts that day were people complaining, get the thing down, you know, deleting, because when I went into that thing, that's all I saw. You know, comments about take this page down, Facebook, look at this, you know.
So what is it about, James? Because it's like, you know, it's like whack-a-mole, you know, you smack one, it goes down, and another two appear. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what is the advice then? Is it parental diligence then?
Absolutely, 100%. You have to, like, especially with young kids. Like I say, I go back to my own daughter. She had Snapchat. I absolutely hate Snapchat. I agree, it is the worst in the world.
Why do you say that?
You monitor.
Is there any good for it
because,
at all?
You know, the messages disappear. You can't see them, you know? So, God, but we monitor it. You know, you can see who sent a message, but you can't actually see the message, you know?
So it's ideal, TikTok, then. It's almost like it has the perfect structure and format for people who are deviants.
Absolutely. It is indeed. No, my daughter, she's a lot of group chats with school and friends and whatnot, this kind of thing. But at the same time, look, I mean, again, the group chats, we do see different people coming into it and then leaving, you know. But we check them out and they turn up their kids, you know. But I suppose parents really need to educate themselves in the internet. I mean, it's all new to us, even Snapchat. Like, I'm 50, you know, I wouldn't even have a clue about Snapchat, to be honest with you, you know. But I just know that the messages disappear. And people just need to educate themselves, I suppose, and just be diligent, like you said, and watch their children, watch their activities, you know. Go into their internet history, have a look at it, see what they're doing.
And yes, absolutely. And you can get apps to do that, where you can do that constantly on your own phone. But again, it raises the question, at what age is it safe to give a child access to the big bad world, whether it's a mobile phone or a tablet, or... A lot of the time it can be done through gaming and things like that. At what age is a good idea? What age is the right age?
Listen, Neil, look, confirmations or communions are coming up there, and I'm sure kids are going to get phones. A lot of it's peer pressure, isn't it? With other kids having phones, and the kid wants, your child will want the phone ring because her friend has a phone and want it. Well, that's what happened in our case with Katie. We were very reluctant to give her a phone, which we got her one when she was 10. And I even hate saying that myself, but we monitor. She's 12 now, and we still monitor the phone, you know?
Yeah.
Which you have to, you know? But you're like, there's so much ways of reaching them these days, you know? Like, I'll even tell you, there, Katie's phone there now at the moment, her voice message on her phone is me saying, hi, this is Katie's father, please leave a message after the phone.
Why'd you do that?
I did that because in case someone ever got her number, that they would ring and the first thing they'll hear is an adult voice and they'll just say, okay, gone.
Okay, you know? But she must not have been cool with that, James.
She doesn't know about it and she'll never hear about it because she won't hear the show. She doesn't know.
She doesn't know that her voice...
She doesn't know because, okay. And I can tell you why, right? It's there, but... a lot of the kids don't use, they don't talk. It's all Snapchat and messaging, you know.
They don't want to talk on the phone. I find that's just amazing in itself.
Yeah, they don't. They just Snapchat or a voice message on Snapchat. This kind. That's what I see with my own daughter anyway and a lot of the other kids, you know.
Until they're, like my mother used to say, well, you're under my house, you're under my rules. And it's certainly the case up until 18 anyway, isn't it, James?
I even know them days, boy. That used to be the way. Maybe go back to that there, you know. I think the phones are the rule of the nation for children. Definitely 16, 17. Definitely go back, I'm saying it again, school, something in schools or education, internet safety.
Okay, my man, do stay in touch and thanks for getting in touch. I do appreciate it. Continue with the great work you do with the boys and girls in Aka, James Toomey. Text 0868104106 if you have thoughts on that one. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. Thank you to Amanda as well, who I spoke to about her son being targeted by a predator. Back after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. And then other texts from the last couple of days. I was talking recently, obviously, about scams and what have you with regards to your conversation on Garda scam alerts. It's a fair point, an obvious assumption. I'm very fortunate. I've never been scammed. But this texter is wondering as to, is it greed at the end of the day that gets people caught with people who scam them about financial opportunities or cryptocurrency? So the texter is saying, I'm fortunate enough to have never been scammed. Touch wood, it won't happen. I cannot lie. I've seen the posts and the ads, and I must say I've been tempted to learn more about the offers. But truthfully, I am dubious by nature, and I simply don't have spare cash to invest. However, from my experience and perspective, people are being tempted and lured, not due to greed, but I would rather believe perhaps desperation. Interesting, because I was thinking that greed does play a part in it, but Texter believes desperation. The struggle is real and people take desperate measures in desperate times. I'm not surprised to hear from you that men are more susceptible to being nabbed by such scams. It ties in with the rise in online gambling and the thrill of quick wins in this instant gratification society we now live in. Scary and sad to see the amount of money and people's lives being ruined by issues like this. Now, I thank you. And while I don't disagree with you, in a sense, you say that it could be desperation. Fair enough. But some of those that were scammed out of 100,000, 130,000, 250,000, life savings, entire bank accounts. So how could somebody that was scammed out of now 100 or 200 or 250 grand be desperate if you have that much money in the bank? Now, maybe naivety or being too trusting or greed could be more applicable reasons, although you believe that maybe if it's smaller amounts, perhaps you could understand that it's literally desperation. You're talking about hundreds or 1,000 or 1,500. You might have debts that are four or five times that, and you see this scam on offer. You don't know it's a scam. Maybe so. But anyway, lads, text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. Out of time already. We'll pick it up in the morning. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.
When Cork talks,
Cork people blow my mind.
They talk to Neil Prendeville
on Red FM.